today, but I don't think anybody landed a punch on the idea that this could have happened with anybody other than Donald Trump in the White House. Some people struggling to accept the simple truth of that. But let's move on. Let's look at, well, let's work on the presumption, and it may be a little naive. Eyewitnesses telling the BBC that attacks continued in Gaza overnight, but let's work upon the optimistic premise that the peace holds, that the ceasefire sustains. What has changed and what has been achieved?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, troops have begun withdrawing from parts of Gaza after the Israeli government approved a ceasefire deal. An exchange of Israeli hostages and hundreds of Palestinian prisoners is expected to take place in the coming days. Blake Sifton is LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv. He says the ceasefire itself hasn't taken effect yet.
We have seen more shelling today in Gaza. There's been reports of tank fire as well as gunfire. But we are seeing the withdrawal of Israeli forces. Now, they're meant to withdraw within 24 hours of the approval by the Israeli government, with Israeli forces remaining in a little over half of the territory in Gaza.
The winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize will be revealed in the next few minutes. The announcement's been overshadowed by Donald Trump's campaign to win the award. There are more than 300 nominees. The leader of Plaid Cymru will say he is ready to replace Labour in the Senate next year. Rhun ap Iorwerth is due to give his address to the party's conference in Swansea this afternoon. Crowds are lining the streets of Manchester for the funeral procession for Ricky Hatton. The former boxing world champion died last month, aged 46. And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Capital, Radio X and Classic FM, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like Ben, who's faced mental health issues and homelessness after spending much of his life in foster care. He's been helped by Bridge for Young People, funded by Global's Make Some Noise, which offered him support and a place to live.
I've actually enjoyed living at the charity. Obviously, my anxiety and depression not going to go away anytime soon. But they helped me get some therapies. I had time to talk.
And thank you, because so far you've helped us to raise £2,292,043. And in just the last couple of minutes, the winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize has been named as Maria Corina Machado, the de facto leader of Venezuela's opposition. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 95.09, that is down 13. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
LBC's Make Some Noise Day.
Right now, across the country, there are so many people going through unimaginably difficult times. Our official charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support those people facing life's toughest challenges. One of the people who has already benefited from your donations is Danny, who spent months in hospital with her young son, Nuno, after he was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. They've been supported by George's Rockstars, a charity offering music therapy to young children enduring long stays in hospital.
Nuno's the youngest of four, and we had him, and he was just quite perfect. And then when he was 8 months old, he became not very well, and that's when we ended up bringing him up to A&E, and they admitted him. And then we spent 5 weeks in hospital having every test under the sun. It must have just been terrifying for him, really. And as parents, you just have this huge sense of helplessness, but also guilt, because he'd look at you and be like, help. But we were in hospital by this point, and we knew that we were going to be in hospital for all four rounds of chemo back to back. So, yeah, it was quite tricky entertaining an eight-month-old in a hospital room. And I used to see Louise around and used to see the blue cage with all the musical instruments in it, and sometimes you would hear things. I remember thinking, music therapy, like, really? And then one day, Louise asked if she could come in, and literally it was verging on life-changing because she just sang and he was like reaching out for the guitar and like he was watching everything she was doing, and it was like, this is the happiest we've seen him in anything for months. So yeah, that was a turning point for me there. It was like, oh yeah, I get music therapy now, this is good.
Make Some Noise supports families like Danny and Nuno by funding music therapists to support young children enduring long stays in hospital. And they wouldn't get that help if it wasn't for your generosity. £20 could mean that another child in hospital like Nuno could have half an hour of music therapy, bringing some much-needed distraction and happiness into their day. To donate £30, £20 or £10, text LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 without a space to 70766. That's LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 to 70766. 100% of your donation will go to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only. Please seek bill payers' permission. Standard network charges may apply. Terms and conditions are at makesomenoise.com. So text LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10, no spaces, to 70766.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Ten oh six is the time. Congratulations to Maria Corina Machado, the winner of this year's Nobel Peace Prize. It could be Donald Trump next year. My understanding of how this scheme works, how this prize works, is that it is unlikely to take into account more recent events. I thought it only took into account events from 2024, because the nominations, I thought, had to be in by January of 2025, which would have been very tricky for Donald Trump to be included. But it may be a little more nuanced than that. However, it was always close to impossible that something that is yet to be enacted could lead to an actual award. But who here has any faith in the old rules of what's possible and impossible? Hands up if you've still got faith in the old order and its ability to resist sweeping and violent assaults upon everything from the rule of law to simple tradition. I don't know how this reaches your ears. I really don't. I hope I've established over the last few years two things. Number one, that I've been completely right about everything that Donald Trump is and would do. And number two, that I have very little competition when it comes to holding him in the lowest imaginable regard. But I in the course of yesterday's program, I kind of found myself thinking that his toxic character is intrinsic to this ceasefire. I mean, you know, whether or not the enormous bribe of a jumbo jet was a significant factor in the process of him deciding to become the first president in history to essentially pull the rug from beneath of the feet of the Israeli prime minister and tell him that his desire to continue this war ad infinitum was now toast, was now over. And nobody else could have done that, because there's a brilliant piece in the Times today by a journalist called Catherine Philp that I cannot recommend highly enough. I was going to share it earlier, but if I'd shared it, I'd have got a dozen messages going, do you know it's behind a paywall? To which I can't reply individually going, no, I had no idea it was behind. Oh, really? Journalists are getting paid for journalism. Oh, whatever will it end? But it's a brilliant piece. Not least because it points out that the deal as it stands was pretty much on the table 18 months ago, but there was no way that Netanyahu was going to sign it, and there was no way, and this is really crucial, and this is why those of us who can see Donald Trump for precisely what he is, a self-confessed sex offender, serial felon, dangerous liar, inspirer of armed insurrection against his own seat of government. When all of the things that people who use phrases like Trump derangement syndrome have to presumably be comfortable with or even approving of, up to and including the woman who accused him of rape that he sued for libel and then subsequently lost. And all of these things, I don't know if they are sources of derangement, but they should be sources of deep, deep disgust. Of course they should. Politicians have an excuse, I suppose. Prime ministers have to kind of keep him sweet because of the damage he could do to them if he didn't. But journalists, commentators, pundits, columnists, they've got no excuse at all for not expressing daily the deep, deep disgust at having such a hideous human being in the most powerful seat in the world. But it is precisely that hideousness that has allowed him to do what he's done. Because I don't think anybody else would ever have said to an Israeli prime minister, we will withdraw support. You will be on your own unless you sign here. And the other side of the negotiating table, they were ready to sign 18 months ago. It's all in an essay by Gershon Baskin, the negotiator who presided over the freeing of Israeli soldiers, Gilad Shalit, in 2011. And he's been on the case of the current peace agreement and had it in place in pretty much September 2024. Hamas had agreed to it in the last months of the Biden administration. But Biden was never going to push hard enough against Netanyahu, and Netanyahu refused point blank to consider it. So, I mean, the tragic subtext of that, of course, is that every death since September of 2024, so just over 12 months of genocide in Gaza, was utterly unnecessary. If Joe Biden had had the wherewithal to put the kind of pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu that Donald Trump has done, then tens of thousands of people, including women and children, would still be alive. And, you know, it doesn't knock, well, of course it knocks the gloss off what has happened, but it probably will go underreported by the kind of people who think that I'm somehow responsible. Personally, a caller to the end of Nick's show, if you weren't listening, for fomenting hatred, when all I've done since the very beginning of this conflict was insist upon valuing a Palestinian life as highly as an Israeli one. It's incredible how upsetting some people find that, isn't it? And yet, of course, looking at the death toll and the continuing denials of the horrors that have unfolded, it's not surprising at all. It may have been something of a lesson for you, though, to discover just how delusional and warped a lot of the coverage of these issues can be. Of course, the only way in which you can get away with persuading people of things that are not true is by banning journalists from accessing reality and reporting back on it to you. There is only one reason why Benjamin Netanyahu's administration has, from the very start, refused to let people like Matt Fry, appearing at the end of Nick's show also there, and others, report on what's going on the ground in Gaza. And that is because they do not want you to know. They do not want anyone to know. Most of all, they do not want their own citizens. They do not want Israeli people to know the scale of what has now been adjudged by various international experts, both academic and members of United Nations commissions, to be a genocide. That's, again, a very, very simple truth. You may not have known that. You may not have known at the beginning of this nightmare that Benjamin Netanyahu had encouraged Qatar to fund Hamas so that the two-state solution that both sides, Netanyahu and Hamas, despise and abhor and reject, would move ever further out of reach. That's not an opinion. That's counting, something which the inimitable Noga Tarnopolsky in Jerusalem reminded us of yesterday. So much stuff that you can only really control if you can keep a lid on coverage. And of course, that includes, as we had a little example of just 15 minutes ago, maligning journalists for having the temerity to actually tell the truth about what is going on rather than simply spouting propaganda for either side. So those are all facts that you may not have been aware of when this began. The Guardian this week listed 17,000 children who've been killed, with the caveat that that won't be the end of it, because God knows how many more will be found when they start sifting through the rubble that Gaza has been reduced to. All of which points to some explanation of why every sensible article I've read, speaks directly of the pariah status that Benjamin Netanyahu has now visited upon Israel. And it's a decision that nobody really seems to challenge, up to and including him, when he spoke to the United Nations and the room emptied as he drew breath and decided or stated that Israel, clearly not aware of what Donald Trump had up his sleeve in the simple context of withdrawing unquestioning support and providing... Listen, don't get me wrong, for me, it's one of the great curses of being objective. I think this peace deal's too kind to Hamas. I really do. I'm top priority should be the Palestinian civilians and the remaining hostages. But I think this peace deal is way too kind to Hamas. But it was the only way you were going to get it over the line. And you could have got it over the line 18 months ago if Joe Biden had been prepared to put the thumbscrews on Benjamin Netanyahu, which, of course, he wasn't, for fairly obvious reasons. Trump doesn't care about anything except Trump, and this is the best possible result for Donald Trump, and that is the only and the abiding reason why it has actually come about. But this pariah status, and Netanyahu himself alluded to it when he talked of Israel becoming like Sparta. I mean, if you don't have a classical education, think of it as Millwall Football Club. No one likes us, we don't care. And that's something Benjamin Netanyahu wanted to do. It's something that perhaps Nick's caller, who was very rude about me a moment ago, wants to do, to turn all of us into people who don't like Israel. Because that way you can perpetuate the circumstances which allow you to undertake hideous, hideous carnage on your very own doorstep. But I refuse to fall into that trap. I refuse to abandon my lifelong belief that the modern state of Israel is a necessary and profoundly important phenomenon. What I don't know is what Benjamin Netanyahu has done to the international status, the international reputation of the country, because I've got a horrible feeling that some people, when they hear Israel, will hear people like Caroline and Finchie spitting bile about your humble, friendly radio presenter, or they will hear the word Israel, and all they'll think of is what has happened in Gaza since October the 7th, 2023. They won't think about the proud history of the population, of the nation, of the contribution to the world. They won't think about the appalling provocations that have been suffered. They won't understand the historical context that has unfolded since 1948. None of those things will register in the minds of many, many people who will hear the words Israel and see the word genocide. It's a horrible situation. And I kind of hope I'm wrong. But it would appear otherwise, because again, the domestic equivalent of trying to ban journalists from getting into Gaza is trying to ban people expressing solidarity with Palestinian suffering from expressing solidarity with Palestinian suffering. The Times carried an interesting article yesterday, and these idiot students spouting hideous thoughts and slogans on campuses across the country have been portrayed as like an enormous force. The Times actually counted them. So the Times' analysis, and I'm not a fan of what Tony Gallagher has done, the editor has done to the Times, but sometimes a stop clock is correct. They used words like dozens or less than 100. And to be clear, you know, that's too many people expressing Jew hatred or expressing support for what Hamas did on October the 7th. But the it would be a tiny proportion of a tiny number of people that were doing that. So the British media moves in, most of the British media moves in to pretend that all protesters are terrorist sympathizers. Suella Braverman was doing it at the very outset. And the failure of it has been spectacular in the public mind. It might have worked on Daily Mail front pages or on Facebook groups, but the failure to carry the public with the Israeli administration has been absolutely hideous. Hideously unsuccessful. The attitude that you will have, not towards Jewish people, of course, because that is sadly what you have to pretend is the case in order to ignore the question of how you could ever have stayed silent about murder on this scale. The word Israel is damaged. And I don't think that's an opinion. I think that's counting. I think all of the polling shows it. So What has this 2-year long campaign done to you? How has it changed your understanding of the world and that part of the world in particular? And how much damage has Benjamin Netanyahu, who is less popular in Israel than Donald Trump is, riddle me that if you want, again, according to polling, which is not, you know, scientific, but it's generally quite reliable, how much damage has Benjamin Netanyahu done to the modern state of Israel, to its international reputation? Why am I reading in newspapers that were very warm towards him just 2 years ago that Israel has achieved a sort of pariah status? And what has he done and why did he do it? He could have signed this deal 18 months ago. He could have been forced to sign it if Joe Biden had demonstrated a little bit more, you could say backbone, or you could say if Qatar had bought him a $400 million jumbo jet. What has this done? What has it done? The trouble started. I didn't realise I had so much to say about this. In terms of rhetoric and reputation, and not in terms of carnage and bloodshed, I remember the sick, cold feeling on October the 7th as the details began to come through. And then the genocide in Gaza has been more of a drip feed, but there have been moments of comparable horror. It's just been an incremental growing abomination, hasn't it, rather than a single sick second. But I remember when Suella Braverman, I kind of knew people who'd been on a protest, and I remember Suella Braverman trying to portray them all as Hamas sympathizers. And I remember thinking, this is really stupid. This is really stupid. You need to recognize two things. You need to recognize that many people are so generationally traumatized by the Holocaust that they can never conceive of an Israeli government doing anything wrong. If it is sold to them as self-defense, if it is sold to them as security, they will never be able to turn around. And this is as true of the diaspora and as it is of the domestic population. They will never be able to, because I've said this phrase a billion times. It's where you go when it starts happening again. So the responsibility of all decent, honest commentators, journalists, people, public thinkers, people trying to get their head around this stuff, the responsibility of all of us should actually have been critical friend to say this cannot go unanswered, this abomination of October the 7th, but do not sell the goodwill that Israel enjoys and needs. Do not sacrifice it upon the altar of Benjamin Netanyahu's survival. And that's what I've learned. They did. And they continue to. UK media, columnists, journalists, callers to Nick, they continue to sacrifice the goodwill of lifelong supporters of the State of Israel upon the altar of Benjamin Netanyahu's self-serving barbarism. And you know, that distinction is so clear. I'm criticizing a world leader, I'm criticizing a politician, I'm criticizing an alleged war criminal. And yet, you know, there'll be someone texting me or ringing Nick to say, that's anti-Semitic. How dare you criticize an alleged war criminal for alleged war crimes? You're anti-Semitic. And you sort of think, the damage you do to that hideous tradition, that bilious practice of anti-Semitism, the damage you do to it when you apply it to somebody who's condemning an alleged war criminal for alleged war crimes, the damage you do when somebody who talks of the necessity and the value and the unique status, because that's when I upset everybody else, the unique status of Israel in the context of 20th century and 21st century history. Someone who understands it and defends it all the time. Remember when Suella Braverman had a pop at the daughter of a Holocaust survivor or an actual Holocaust survivor? The damage you do when you just go football club on something as nuanced and difficult as this is absolutely immense. And so that's the question that I have for you. What's changed in the way you look at the world? 0345 60 60 973. What's changed in your understanding of that particular corner of the Middle East? And I will actually ask the question, because everywhere I look, I'm reading about how Benjamin Netanyahu has rendered Israel a pariah state, how this could never have happened if he hadn't hemorrhaged so much goodwill and international support for so long. How much damage has he done? When he goes, how much of that damage stays? When he goes, how much of that pariah status remains? When he goes, how much of that ludicrous ambition to become Sparta, to celebrate isolation, to revel in alienation, how much of that stays? How much of that gets hung around the neck of every Israeli? Please God, none. But that's naive. That's idealistic. How much damage has Netanyahu done to the Israeli cause? 0345 6060 973 is the number you need. What have you learned from the events of the last 2 years? And how much damage has he done to the Israeli cause? It's 1025.
LBC.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is, and you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money. So head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
CEL. James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 26 minutes after 10, and it is a little early, perhaps, to be pausing the peace process and presuming it will sustain. It's far from guaranteed, but it is the fundamental basis of today's conversation. It will work, it will sustain, it will hold. What has changed? What have the last 2 years taught you? And what has Benjamin Netanyahu done to the modern state of Israel? Nitzan is in Northampton. Nitzan, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Quite nervous. It's the first time I'm speaking to you.
It's only me.
I hear you saying that to all the newcomers. I was born in Israel. I came to England when I was 9 years old. Both my parents were born out of Israel. They were both born in former Yugoslavia,
right,
and survived the Holocaust. My dad especially, because he was in Belgrade, being a big city and under German occupation. I lost my grandparents in the Holocaust, his parents, and he became an orphan at the age of 9.
Gosh.
With his brother and his sister. Now, his sister was really very small, and friends of them that weren't Jewish adopted her. And him and his brother were given new identities and were put in an orphanage, a boys' home, basically, you know.
Yeah.
A Christian boys' home. So the Holocaust has a significant meaning in Jewish people's lives. And the thing that I hate the most, I am sorry, let me just gather myself.
You take all the time you want, Nitzan.
The thing that I hate the most is what Netanyahu has done has diminished the effect of the Holocaust.
Oof.
No longer will Israelis, Jewish people say, look what they did to us, because people will point out what we did in Gaza.
I mean, a lot of people are going to because you know a lot of people who share your faith, your religion, are going to really, really struggle with that as a statement. I completely respect your right to make it, but I suppose I have to point out the numbers don't bear comparison, do they?
The numbers don't make the numbers don't make comparison. We don't even know the extent, as you said, until the big dig in the rubble.
We know it's not going to be 6 million.
Fascists. Netanyahu sits in a government with two fascists.
That's true.
So. If we agree that the Nazis were fascists, the people who orchestrated Gaza are fascists.
How hard has this been for you personally, given your family's history of Holocaust survival and indeed Holocaust murder?
Yeah, we expect. How can I put it? It's difficult because I've always been against it. I've always been pro-peace. I've always been a humanitarian. I saw this coming a long, long time ago. I don't know if a two-state solution is going to happen purely because of the number of population in such a small area. There are 750,000 settlers already in the West Bank. Mm. Where are they going to go, James? Let's say we draw the 67 borders. Where are they going to go? It's a logistics problem. It's not even whether we want to or not.
It's not an opinion, it's counting, which is a
750,000 people. Israel is already overpopulated. It's a tiny country. People don't realize.
There's an awful lot of things people don't realise. Something you understand much better than I do. But I do want to ask you what your response is to the events of the last 24 hours. I've got no idea what you're going to say, by the way, Nitzan, actually.
Hopeful.
Good. Me too.
There's only one thing I want to add to our conversation, yeah?
Yes.
About 3-4 weeks ago, I was in Israel. I had to go for a family emergency, but we won't go into that.
Okay.
That forced me to be in Tel Aviv for about 5 days. Now, you go walk around Tel Aviv, James.
Yeah.
And you don't feel it. It was horrifying to me. It was really, really horrifying to me. That you walk in Tel Aviv, the restaurants are full, the bars are full. People, you don't see as many tourists, yeah? That's fair enough.
Mm.
But they can always count on the Jewish tourists from the rest of the world in Israel. But the way of life is going like nothing's happened. And you're talking about from Tel Aviv to Gaza, you're talking about 45 miles. And a lot of people don't realize that.
And you, like you find that incredible.
From Northampton to, let's say, Hemel Hempstead. And, and people are starving there. And people have been bombed there. I walked along the beachfront because Tel Aviv is a coastal city. Along the whole of it is along the beach. And people, you know, are doing yoga on the beach and playing volleyball. And you're thinking, why are you like, you want to go up to them and shake them and say, what are you doing? Do you know what's happening?
Do they know what's happening?
You got to be ultra, ultra blind, stupid, and but even the people that know what's happening in the rest of the world, Jewish people, how many Jews can you find on the telephone in that will stand up for Israel despite of everything they know already? Commentators. They're aware of what's going on. They just choose to shut their eyes, put their fingers in their ears and go, la, 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 la.
There's a bit of plausible deniability as well, which I suppose is created by the refusal to let journalists in that you can claim that everything, all information coming out is therefore bias or corrupted, and you refuse to let in anybody whose reputation would be insulated from those accusations. I don't know.
Not in this modern world. I'm sorry, James.
No,
if you want to know what's happening in this modern world, you will find out what's happening in this modern world. But if you don't want to know, that's the thing. They can have the deniability because they didn't want to know. They didn't look into it.
I'm not going to argue with you, obviously, and I fully understand that when we talk about genocide, it's about intent, not about numbers. I was just illustrating the statistical differences between the...
Do you know what I said to somebody that will horrify you?
Go on.
I said...
Be careful. Be sure you want to say this on the radio.
Yes, I do want to say it. Okay. Because it's me saying it, not you.
Yeah.
The IDF don't need concentration camps. They're killing them in their homes and on their streets. And how dare we say IDF? They're not a defense force. We should call them the Israeli army. They're not a defense force.
Well, that was the point I was about to make, actually. And it was simply the observation that I wonder whether I should have as much sympathy with it as I do listening to you, but I do think of other families with a history like your family and the knowledge that if or when it starts happening again, there is now a place outside Europe where they and you can go and be safe, and therefore anything and everything done to safeguard that security is justifiable.
Are you believing what you're saying?
No, I'm telling you what I think other people believe. I'm telling you what I know other people believe, and I have worked very hard to reach a place of sympathy for that position.
As opinionated as you are,
yeah,
and the luxury that you have in LBC compared to someone like the BBC is you're able to tell people your opinion.
Yes. It is my opinion
let's put it this way. Your vision of the world and your politics very much reflect my own.
Okay.
And I know you don't believe that.
No, but I believe that a lot of people do. I've been struggling for 2 years to understand a mindset that doesn't reflect what you've just described, that doesn't feel all of the things that you feel, even reluctantly. And it is, I think, because protecting the place that you go to when it starts happening again trumps, pardon the pun, it trumps everything else, even the suffering, even the carnage in Gaza. That exists as a world view.
Do you know what one of my sisters says?
No.
She's married a US guy, and she currently lives in Seattle. But she's in Israel at the moment. And when she comes and visits me here, she says to me, because I have a British passport, but she says to me, because the only passport she has at the moment is an Israeli passport.
Right.
And she says to me, I'm stateless. I don't belong in Israel. I don't belong in the United States. I'm stateless. I haven't got a state. And that's difficult because, do you know, the other thing that I spotted when we...
I'm late for the news. It feels such an inadequate observation given the power of...
One more thing.
Go on,
do you know what else I noticed when I was in Tel Aviv?
Go on.
What we have done in 75 years is truly amazing.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably amazing.
I'm glad you ended on that note. I really am, and I'm very glad you rang me today. Are you glad you did?
I am, yes.
Well, I hope we talk again on in happier circumstances.
So do I.
Take care, Nate Sam. It's 10:38. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
Israel's military says it is now observing a ceasefire in Gaza after the country's government approved a deal with Hamas. An exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners is expected to take place in the coming days. Troops have begun withdrawing from parts of the territory. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been holding talks on the next steps with her European counterparts in Paris. And the Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado has won the Nobel Peace Prize. That's despite President Trump's very public campaign to win this year's award. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale, with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Business healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per employee per month, which
will go up when people use it.
Actually, no. We don't do price hikes each time our services are used. Just
medical questionnaires for everyone.
No. And it's quick and easy to join.
Sounds great. I'm in.
Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Selected surgical procedures. Immediate access for businesses. Wait periods apply for personal membership. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It is 10:41. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Extraordinary response that you would expect from that extraordinary contribution from Nitsan. I found it very powerful, very moving. I don't know whether hearing someone at the end of Nick's show inciting hatred against me made me a little bit more susceptible to Nitsan's clear compassion and humanity, or whether indeed he heard it and was prompted to ring in as a consequence of that. But here we go. And for the record, Nick dealt with it as I would expect a trusted colleague to do, and as I deal with some criticism of him, although never, I don't think, incitement to hatred in quite such a vile fashion from Caroline in Finchley. But there we go. I wonder how many people Nitsan speaks for. I really do, because the question he answered is simple and straightforward. Knowing, as we do now, that Netanyahu could have signed this deal 18 months ago, and responsibility for his refusal to do so lies in large part with Joe Biden, what on earth has been achieved in the interim? What on earth has been achieved in the months that have elapsed since? Hamas were ready to sign it. They'd agreed it in September of 2024, so not quite 18 months. This is the testimony of Gershon Baskin, a key, historically successful negotiator who's written an essay revealing his own involvement. This deal could have been done a long time ago. Hamas agreed to all the same terms in September 2024 in what became known as the 3 weeks deal that I had received in writing and voice message in Arabic and in English. But at that point, the response of the Israeli negotiators was that the prime minister did not agree to end the war. And of course, this is absolutely crucial information to any understanding of the issues, but that is why many, many people will either not access it or not heed it. They will pretend it's not true. I don't think they can quite accuse Gershon Baskin of being a Hamas propagandist, but anybody else who's been telling the truth for the last 2 years has run the risk of being labelled in that way by people up to and including British Home Secretaries like Suella Braverman, who was even prepared to sort of publicly insult an actual Holocaust survivor, Joan Salter, MBE. I tell that story in my last book. What has he done? What has he done to Israel? Leaving at the door any desperate attempts to conflate Jew hatred, with criticism of Israel, which is, I guess, the only way you've been able to defend Benjamin Netanyahu, by pretending that condemning and criticizing him is anti-Semitic or is hatred of Jewish people. Hatred of genocide can't be hatred of Jewish people. That's just ridiculous. It's intellectually bankrupt. Praying, if that is your want, that the peace process holds. What damage has been done? I'm going to take another break now. The show has been very topsy-turvy today. My introduction was incredibly long, and then Nitsan came along and said, hold my pint, effectively. he made an incredibly long contribution as well. I've got plenty more calls to come. I also want to find out a little bit more about the person who's actually won the Nobel Peace Prize. And I'm also very grateful to you for the extremely kind words with which you are currently bombarding me. But we will try to get the show back on something vaguely akin to an even keel after this.
This is LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead. Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to St. Martin from £679 flying from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
Two mysteries to solve. Someone just messaged me to say, James, did Donald Trump win the Nobel Peace Prize? More on that shortly. And also, I failed to solve a mystery yesterday, having promised that I would. A lot of people worried that because when you WhatsApp me, the blue ticks don't appear on your message, so you're worried that I don't see it or that you've been blocked. We're looking into why the status of your ticks has changed, but I can categorically assure you that I'm seeing all of your messages. I know that I'm seeing all of your messages, because I'm seeing all the ones complaining about being blocked while I'm reading them, which means... And also, I don't think you can block. But anyway, regardless, I can see your messages. Do not worry about the ticks. I wonder how many people had the name Maria Corina Machado tripping off their tongue on a regular basis prior to this morning. My next guest did. Dr. Christopher Sabatini is a senior research fellow for Latin America, US and the Americas program at Chatham House, and he joins me now. It's a bit of a curse, I suppose, that she has received this award in the shadow of Donald Trump's naked lust for it, Christopher. But let's not let's not talk about him. Let's talk instead about her. What is the rationale for the Nobel Peace Prize today?
James, I think we should get back to what it means later about for Trump and his support for the Venezuelan opposition. But for now, a little bit about Maria Corina Machado. She has been a longtime civic activist. I've actually known her for 20 years now.
Gosh.
She had started a election observation organization, then switched over to politics, was elected to the National Assembly. And she'd really been just a member of a large pool of opposition leaders for a long time. But last year, actually the end of 2023, in anticipation of the presidential elections in July last year, the opposition held a nationwide primary in which she was selected as the candidate. And she was barred from participating in the election by the Maduro-controlled, Maduro being the president of Venezuela, his controlled Supreme Court. So she threw her weight behind a stand-in. And by all accounts, she and her stand-in won the election, 70-30%. But Maduro claimed that they had won, never producing any evidence of that, although the evidence had been demonstrated by the opposition and independent observers that happened to be on the ground. And since then, she's gone into hiding. No one knows where she is in Venezuela. Her campaign team had to hole up in the Argentine embassy surrounded by security forces for months. There were more than 2,000 arrests after the election. So she's, you know, she's courageously filled the vacuum of a very fractured opposition, competed in the elections, even though she wasn't officially on the ticket. And during that, it was truly inspiring watching her fill the plazas and streets of Caracas and all over the country with these enthusiastic supporters who just basically wanted change. They wanted an end to the brutality of the Maduro government, its economic collapse, and its corruption.
What's she like as a person?
She's, you know, I'll confess this, you know, I think to be a human rights activist at that level, she's very charismatic.
Yes.
She's also very stubborn. And I think it's true of a lot of human rights activists. You don't, you don't rise to that level of sort of resistance. And sort of, if you don't have a certain amount of metal and resist and stubbornness about you. So she's tough. They refer to her as the Iron Lady. She's very conservative, which is a surprise because Venezuela used to be a very moderate country in terms of its politics, but that's changed under Nicolas Maduro. She's very charismatic. She's very courageous. Her family lives outside Venezuela. She's opted to remain in Venezuela. And she, you know, she also is a great showman. And I mean that as a positive sense. She, you know, during the campaign, because there were arrest warrants out for her, she would appear at these rallies oftentimes, especially after the stolen elections, and hidden and then sort of very, you know, theatrically take off a hood and demonstrate that it's her, and people would flock. It was, you know, it was great showmanship, but that's what people needed then.
Is it a surprise, this announcement? I sense it is.
It is a surprise for a number of reasons. First of all, the Nobel Prize Committee has tended to ignore the disaster in Venezuela for a long time. You know, this has been, you know, 20 years in the making, more than 20 years in the making. And so it's really been quite silent. I think, again, this election helped to shine a spotlight on Venezuela and on one person in particular. So I think it made it much easier for them to really grab a toehold, if you will, on this. And so, yes, it's a surprise. We'll see how this plays out in terms of both U.S. politics. Trump has mobilized more than 8 ships off the coast of Venezuela, 10 F-35s and a nuclear submarine, supposedly taking out drug boats that are running, although it's actually intending to rattle the Maduro government. Now, we'll see how Trump feels since he's so coveted this prize, if he'll be a little bit jealous, and whether he'll either sort of ramp up his rhetoric and pressure on the Maduro government, or maybe, who knows, out of just petty jealousy, do something else.
Well, and where does that tension come from? Because from what you've told us about Maduro, the playbook he's operating from sounds like one that Donald Trump also consults on a regular basis, whether it's election result denial or trying to criminalize criticism and or indeed lock up dissenters. What where's the tension in that relationship?
Like the good journalist you are, James, you're going to bring me out to say some things I probably shouldn't. You know, the truth is that a lot of Venezuelan opposition leaders who are so want to remove Maduro are willing to embrace Trump, who's engaging in the exact same playbook.
Yeah.
The difference is is that Maduro is a leftist, self-proclaimed leftist. He's actually more just of a corrupt oligarch. And so, you know, they simply want him out. And I've said this to the opposition oftentimes that, you know, it bothers me as an American that they're willing to countenance, you know, vast executive overreach, violation of due process and other things just to remove their hated president, while endorsing someone who's doing the exact same thing, within his own country.
So Trump's animus would be the alleged leftism, in the context of why he would see him as an ideological enemy.
That's part of it. It's also, if you remember, during the 2024 campaign, Trump made Venezuelan immigrants one of a major issue, including the argument that this gang, the Tren de Aragua, had taken over a town in Colorado. That wasn't true at all, in fact. But he made that a rallying point, and he argued that Maduro had thrown open the doors of mental facilities and prisons and sent them all to the United States, and that the crime spike in the United States due to undocumented immigration was primarily coming from Venezuela. So for him, too, this is a domestic issue. He may be sort of brethren with Maduro in the autocratic playbook, but for Donald Trump, especially his domestic agenda, it's all about immigration and rounding up, as he says, the bad hombres.
So Venezuelans successfully othered from Trump's point of view. This is so interesting. I'm a little bit embarrassed that so much of it is new to me, but there's no final question. I mean, we said we wouldn't, but I fully understand why we can't avoid him. it would have stung even more if she was opposed to a regime that he liked, right? I mean, I'm just thinking about the sort of mental, the psychological trauma that he will be enduring when he wakes up later today.
That's the difficult thing to imagine, James. But for the moment, just generally. But for the moment now, there's also a little bit of intra-government rivalry here, because Marco Rubio is the one who embraced Maria Corina Machado.
Right.
Donald Trump has been embracing, up until recently, negotiations with the Maduro government, thinking he could broker a deal with them. So within the regime, basically this was also endorsement of Marco Rubio's full-throated endorsement. I mean, he's the one who constantly refers to Maria Corina Machado as the Iron Lady, legitimate president or ruler of Venezuela. So this will also stick in the craw a little bit, because he's going to have to look across his cabinet table and see his Secretary of State, who was advocating for a long time.
He could blame him for it. Why did you have to big her up like that?
Exactly. Did you pick someone else? Me?
Oh, Christopher, that was a lot more entertaining than I was expecting. Never mind illuminating. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Cheers. That's Christopher Sabatini, Dr. Christopher Sabatini there, Senior Research Fellow for Latin America, US and the Americas, at Chatham House. I don't think we've ever had a guest from Chatham House who hasn't been brilliant, have we? They're so good, the Chatham House people. 10:56 is the time. Back to the conversation. There's some echoes there about my enemy's enemy being my friend almost, or, of course, people being prepared to, in Venezuela, people being prepared to countenance Trump's appalling nature and behavior because they think he might help in getting rid of the person they want to get rid of. So you embrace the toxicity in order to achieve what you want, which is, you know, arguably what has happened in the Middle East. But Erica is in Twickenham. She's been waiting a long time to tell us her answers to the question of what has actually changed or been achieved or being lost in the last 2 years. Erica, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thank you. Like Nixon, I'm also a bit nervous as it's my first time calling.
Thanks.
I want to say first, thank you for your somewhat more balanced presentation of the situation than some of the other presenters. I've been finding it quite distressing to hear how one-sided the reporting and the call-ins have been on some of the other programs.
You are allowed to ring them as well, you know.
I did try the other day. It didn't get on, but I do wish there was a slightly greater recognition of all the Palestinians have endured in the decades before 7th of October. There's too much of taking October 7th as a starting point, as if Hamas started the war on October the 7th. But anyway, you're talking about how's the view of Israel changed in the last 2 years. Well, just to say that I visited Israel in 2004. Right. So I've been aware since then of like flagrant injustice of the system. I went to Tel Aviv, I went to different places around Israel and the West Bank, experienced the horror of the checkpoint, saw how it was an apartheid system basically for Palestinians. So I've been aware of that, and I'm guilty of having let it become a background topic in the years since. And I think a large part of that, it was the Oslo Accords, but it put Palestine out of the world's consciousness. And because of that, for most of the last 2 years, I had just not wanted to read or hear anything. I know that it's totally unjust, and it's just so distressing to read and hear anything. But as things started escalating some months ago, I did start listening and learning and seeing what's going on. And yes, most of it is through social media, because you can't get any truth on the mainstream media. And it's been shocking to see what you hear Israeli politicians saying, what you see the IDF recording and documenting, and their attitude towards this. What you see Israeli society voting and polling on, that most of them are saying that the escalation should be even more in Gaza, that Gaza should be wiped out, etc. So that hasn't been very favourable. But also what has been highlighted is more facts about the history, and particularly the distinction between Zionism and Judaism, which I think is a crucial and fundamental distinction that not enough of you clarify or highlight enough. And the blurring between the two is extremely dangerous, and I think it's at the root of a lot of this. A lot of the upset. But
there is genuine anti-Semitism out there. There always has been, as you know. But the conflation of criticism of Israel with hatred of Jews has been hideous to watch.
I mean, I've been on protests. I haven't seen any hatred of Jews. The beautiful ones.
That doesn't mean the people who have a lion.
I mean, I haven't experienced that. I'm exposed to a lot of social media and the protests and stuff. I have not seen hate against Jews. I have. Anti-Zionism.
I've even seen it on Blue Sky.
Okay, but let's talk. Do you know the
presumption that every Jew supports Netanyahu is anti-Semitic?
Do you know the difference between Zionism and Judaism?
Of course I know the difference between Zionism and Judaism. One's a religious faith and one's the belief in the existence of a geographical entity in the 20th and the 21st century. It gets confusing when people use Zionism to describe people who don't think Israel can do anything wrong in the context of defending itself or its population. So even within that one word, there are confusions and difficulties. But I I'm going to be late for the news again, but I want you to tell me, because it sounds like you were already possessed of a very strong opinion on these matters long before this.
But I also had Israeli friends, and I have lots of Jewish friends.
Still do.
I do. I mean, the Israeli friends and I have different opinions on what's going on.
Plenty of people in Israel who are unhappy with what has unfolded. Not as many as you would like to see, or perhaps I would like to see. But your point, I'm already late for the news. I just want to be clear I've understood you. So much for getting the show back on an even keel times-wise. You just think that there's a lot more widespread understanding of some of the issues than there was before before Hamas embarked on the terrorist atrocity of October the 7th, but more pertinently, before Benjamin Netanyahu spent 2 years essentially drawing attention to what his administration was doing in Gaza.
Right. Yeah. I think there's a lot more recognition
I do too, and that's why everyone's
power and interest of the Zionist dream. It's a Western colonization dream, and that's what people are opposed to.
I've got to go to the news. Thank you. But colonization is not the same as genocide. It sounds a little bit lily-livered, but you can have one without the other. And for the record, I completely, always have been, always will be, in support of the modern state of Israel. Expansionism, no. You know, settlements, no. Illegal settlements, of course not. But the difficulty of conducting a conversation, even when you can't agree on the definition of words, is just immense. It's huge. That's not a criticism of you, Erica. It's a reflection of the reality that we all inhabit. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Israeli military says a ceasefire agreement in Gaza is now in effect. Troops have begun their withdrawal as part of the deal agreed with Hamas, but they will still be in more than half of the territory. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has been holding talks on Gaza with her European counterparts. LBC's political correspondent, Aggie Chambray, is in Paris.
Here in Paris, they were discussing the so-called day two of the Gaza peace deal, how these European and Arab countries will play their part in security, governance and reconstruction. In practice, that meant there were conversations about what an international stabilization force would actually look like and how to get aid into Gaza. Yvette Cooper also said it was too early to say if European countries will push to have a seat at the table on the so-called Board of Peace, although I'm told it is fully expected they will continue to make the case. Aggie Chambray, LBC, Paris.
All remaining hostages are due to be released in the coming days in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. The Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado has won the Nobel Peace Prize. This year's announcement has been overshadowed by President Trump's very public campaign to win the award. The Foreign Secretary has defended the possibility of requiring some children to have digital ID. Ministers are consulting on whether to include anyone over 13 rather than 16 in the rollout of the system. It's part of plans to tackle illegal migration. Yvette Cooper's told LBC that many forms of digital identification are already in place.
Lots of 13-year-olds already do, and right. What the department is going to be consulting on is exactly how that should be taken forward. So I do think that this is the right way forward to have this a standardised process now, and it's something that we had been already setting out for people who come to work from abroad.
And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All our stations, including Classic FM, Heart and Smooth, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like Danny, whose son Nuno was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia as a baby. They have been supported by George's Rockstars, funded by Global's Make Some Noise, which offers music therapy at Southampton Children's Hospital.
She just sang, and he was like reaching out for the guitar, and like he was watching everything she was doing, and it was like, this is the happiest we've seen him in anything for months.
And so far, you've helped us to raise £2,420,296. So thank you. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 13 at 94.96. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts of the UK. Sunny spells developing this afternoon. A high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean?
Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 6 minutes after 11 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we turn our attention next to the story that we should have done sooner, but it's been bubbling away in the background now for weeks. It's an extraordinary example of what I suppose you'd have to call the reverse Midas touch. King Midas, of course, the ancient monarch who was granted wishes, Greek, I think, granted wishes and shows that everything he touches turns to gold. It's a fascinating story. I would recommend my friend Alex Andreou's podcast series, Podyssey. You see what he did there? Looking at Greek myths and their relevance to the modern world. The King Midas one is, well, they're all brilliant, but I really do recommend that you listen to the King Midas one, because quite a lot of mythology is misrepresented, as in the stories we think we know are not the stories that the ancients told. One example of that would be, what's his chops, wouldn't it? King Canute. How many people still think King Canute turned up on the beach that day because he was so up himself he thought he'd be able to turn the tide back? What he was trying to do was demonstrate to his barons, his court, his nobles, that he didn't have
superpowers, that he wasn't omnipotent, that he could go stop to the tide and nothing would happen at all. I think about King Canute quite often. Do you know who else I think about quite often? Especially when Donald Trump's in the White House and you watch people bending the knee in ways that are, frankly, puke-worthy. Henry VIII. I think about Henry VIII quite a lot. A sort of syphilitic psychopath who got away with doing whatever the hell he wanted, including dismantling the Catholic Church. Whether or not he was wanging on about Judeo-Christian values while he dismantled the Catholic Church, I do not know. But, you know, you can understand why people went along with Henry VIII, because if they didn't, they'd get their head chopped off. That's not a fate that would await anybody who stood up to Donald Trump in the British or the American media or political establishment, and yet bend the knee they do. I wish, and also when we were kids, we got taught that Henry VIII was like some sort of hero, like a sort of cross between Richard the Lionheart and, go on, think of someone clever to insert into this bit of my commentary. Richard the Lionheart and, I don't know, I nearly said Lester Piggott then because he was really good at riding horses. But yeah, anyway, you know what I mean. We get taught that Henry VIII was a don. And in fact, he was, I mean, by any stretch of the imagination, he was. I wonder if that's the first example of those weird right wingers saying, people are ashamed of our country. You shouldn't be able to describe Henry VIII as a syphilitic psychopath who murdered his own wives. Because he was. And that somehow would stain the flag that I've just hung from a lamppost. I don't know. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the reverse Midas touch that Keir Starmer currently possesses. Because there's two things about this that are funny. The first is that net support for digital ID cards at the beginning of the summer stood at about 35% of the population. So there was, 35% is enough to get you elected. I don't know what opposition was. It would have been 53% in June said they were in favour of digital ID cards. It fell from 35%. So in June, 53% of voters said they were in favour of digital ID cards and 19% were opposed. Let's just get those numbers in mind, right? 53% of voters said they were in favour of digital ID cards last June. 19% said they were opposed. Fast forward a few weeks to Keir Starmer announcing the rollout of a national ID scheme, in the immediate aftermath of which 31% of people said they were in favour of it and 45% said they were opposed. So, literally, by dint of announcing something that was previously quite popular, Keir Starmer appears to have single-handedly and personally made it spectacularly unpopular. Recommending journalism today, so I'll carry on. There's a wonderful piece in The New World, which is a wonderful organ. It used to be known as The New European, but it has expanded its remit somewhat, by the brilliant James Ball, which really just goes into forensic detail about how the ID cards disaster is another sign, to steal the headline for a moment, that Starmer has lost it. Are you looking at the winter fuel allowance and other things? Digital ID probably gets chalked up. I mean, how has that happened? How has that happened? How does one man get to turn a policy that's popular into a policy that's unpopular by dint of actually introducing the policy? I do not know. You can riddle me that if you want on 0345 6060 973. Because, and the other bit that's funny, is that if you were terminally online, like some, I think you have to be right wing now, don't you, to be terminally online? Because if you lean ever so slightly towards compassion and decency, then you're going to find it unbearable since Elon Musk took over Twitter. I don't know. Maybe some people are still there fighting the good fight. But I have to say, dipping my toe, as I am obliged to do, into the worlds of the terminally online, the obsessions of the terminally online, if you had to come up with something guaranteed to unite all the wombats and fruitcakes, all the sort of vaccine deniers, all the COVID weirdos, the people who thought that your phone was giving you the virus, all of the New World Order, World Economic Forum, Great Replacement Theory, COVID, Bovid. If you had to unite all the crackpots, fruitcakes and wazzocks, it would be hard to think of a better idea than a digital ID card. I always remember Farage complaining about Oyster cards years ago. And I don't want anybody knowing where I'm going. And you sort of thought, who is going to be sitting in an office somewhere reporting on the fact that Nigel Farage has just travelled from Leicester Square to Hainault. It's while complaining all the while of people speaking foreign in the neighbouring carriage. I mean, I don't. So if you wanted to unite all of those people, then a digital ID card in the current climate would actually be epic trolling, as the kids almost certainly don't say. But that doesn't account for this scale of opposition. So I'm doing that thing that I should probably do slightly more often. It could be, you're right, it could be footballification. It could just be Starmer's done it, and I'm on the other team, so I now hate it. I liked it before, but then Starmer did it, and now I don't. But there's obviously something else going on here. The fact that that popularity plummeted is not just going to be down to the crackpots, fruitcakes and loonies. Is it? I don't think it is. And I think I need to slightly review. Well, do I? I don't know. I think I might need to review my conviction that most opposition to this scheme is confined to crackpots, fruitcakes and loonies. What are the real reasons? What are the non-crazy reasons for resisting? I suppose, in a way, I'm asking you why you changed your mind, because there must be a huge number of people listening to this programme who are part of the statistics we're describing. You thought it was a good idea in June, and you think it's a really bad idea now. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. How? So there's two questions. There's the personal and there's the political. The political might be a bit easier to answer. So how on earth did Keir Starmer manage to turn a popular idea into an unpopular idea by promising to bring it in? Just think about those words. It's absolutely nuts what I'm describing. How did Keir Starmer, all answers welcome, it's Friday, so you can be a bit silly if you want. How did Keir Starmer manage to turn a popular idea into an unpopular idea by promising to bring it in? 0345 6060 973. Are the opponents of it mostly crackpots, loonies and fruitcakes? Or are there? They can't be, can't they? Because the Liberal Democrats are opposed to it. Ed Davey doesn't like it. There's lots of... But I don't know what the sensible reasons are. My friend Scott closed down the most obvious line of argument for me last time we were talking about it, because I used to be a great upholder of the idea that, oh, no, we can't bring that in, because if we end up with some fascists in charge, they'll be able to use it in a really, really bad way. To which Scott responded by pointing out that if the fascists are in charge, mate, they can do whatever they want. They can bring it in by tea time. They don't need to sit there hoping that they'll inherit an ID card scheme from Keir Starmer so that they can start rounding up all the Capricorns and Irish radio presenters. They will just be able to do it anyway because they are fascists. So I don't really buy the idea that we should be opposed to it in case future governments use it unpleasantly. The current government won't be using it unpleasantly, but future governments might. Maybe your objection is that the current government will be using it unpleasantly. But the cold, hard statistical fact is that digital ID cards for everybody, including 13-year-olds, according to one report today, which, again, I don't really worry about. The Daily Mail use words like sinister, and I use words like why? Why? Why should I be worried about this? Why would you be worried about it? 0345 6060 973. And how on earth did Keir Starmer... This is actually hilarious, right? Unless you're suffering from chronic footballification, in which case it's been a really tricky week for you, hasn't it? Because you have to give Donald Trump some credit for... quite a lot of credit, in fact, for what has happened in the Middle East. And you have to laugh at Keir Starmer's uncanny ability to turn political gold into base metal. He's turned it into purest green. It was really, really popular in June. Sounds like that Prince song, doesn't it? Sign of the Times. So it's really, really popular in June. And by September, it was massively unpopular. And all that changed in the interim was that Keir Starmer said he was going to do it. Riddle me that. On 03456060973. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. It's 11:17.
This is LBC. At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale, with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
Someone in the UK has got that Euro Millions feeling because they have won the incredible £26 million Euro Millions jackpot. I reckon they've had a bit of a dance. All around the house, then out the door, down the path and into the street. For all we know, they're probably still dancing. Go on, guys. Get that Euro Millions feeling. Euro Millions from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 11:18, and it's one of those rare mornings where I use words like fruitcakes, crackpots and loonies, and probably reach 12 noon today regretting it and thinking I shouldn't have been so rude. But most of the arguments I've heard about ID cards or digital ID cards have been a bit daft, and yet they are apparently powerful enough, or Keir Starmer's personal toxicity is such that a popular policy can be rendered unpopular by simply having this particular Prime Minister promise to introduce it. So what has happened, either on the political level or for you on the personal? I wonder how I pronounce this name. I usually get phonetic guidance on the screen. I'm going to go for Mache.
Hi, it's Mache from Derby.
Mache. I can do Derby, mate. I was born there, but I needed a little bit of help with Mache. What's on your mind, Mache? What would you like to say?
Hi. So, yeah, I'm calling because I really like the analogy with the anti-Midas patch that Keir Starmer...
it's not me. I didn't come up with that. I think lots of people did long before I piled in.
I think it's spot on, though. I think it's spot on. And I'm just calling because I was thinking about the electronic IDs that Keir Starmer wants to introduce. And because in Poland, I come from Poland, I've been in this country for 12 years, and we do have national ID, and I'm not really against it.
Yeah.
But in the sense that Keir Starmer wants to introduce it, I see why people are against it, because we have a lot of tools in place at the moment that we can use to check people's right to work in this country. And I just think this is another way that it's really easy for reform supporters to prove that they just want to spend money for nothing. And I just, you know, I am not particularly against it per se, but in this particular instance, because of the way it's being introduced, I am against it.
You didn't have strong views about it, but you'd have been at least ambivalent because your experiences in Poland have been largely positive. But because he introduced it as a sort of anti-illegal immigration, he would say, but quite often when people are explaining their opposition to illegal immigration, that the word illegal becomes increasingly redundant. It doesn't technically in this case. The facts don't support that. I'm talking about the rhetoric, because he's kind of framed it as a weapon with which to hit illegal immigrants. That then it becomes something different from what it was back in June. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And at this point, I see that a lot of people are being obsessed at freaks, as you call them,
yes,
with this idea of the government controlling everybody. But at the same time, I just think that I agree that whatever Keir Starmer would now propose, that the freaks of people that are permanently online would oppose it, no matter what it would be. If he offered everybody £500 a month, I think reform voters would say, no, we don't want it, because it's coming from Keir Starmer.
I think you might be right. Yeah, but I mean, the petition hit, at the end of last month, it hit 2.4 million, which is quite a lot. I was quite rude to a caller on the day it was introduced by pointing out that you can get 100,000 signatures on a petition to, rename the moon John by tea time tomorrow if you want. I'm not a massive fan of petitions, but they're a numbers game, aren't they? And the opposition to it is huge. So I don't know that we can break it down, Mache. How much of it is simple antipathy towards Keir Starmer in percentage terms? How much of it is fear of state overreach, if you like, or they're having too much information? How much of it is the sort of fruitcake loony and crackpot constituency who think that they're going to use it to control our brains or infect us all with some new virus. Do you see what I mean? It's an extraordinary coalition and almost impossible to
I agree, but also I think you have to ask the question, why is it being pushed so much? So I'm not a citizen of this country yet. I would like to apply, and I'm not particularly supporting reform. But I have seen this petition online on X, on Facebook, and I'm, you know, I'm not interested in that. I didn't want to sign it, and I've seen this being shared, being
it's going
viral.
It's getting pushed in front of you. It's all about the algorithms, isn't it?
And so how many people find it because it's anti-Labour government rather than actually understanding what they're signing?
Yeah, sign here if you hate Keir Starmer, and then all sorts of people from the left and the right would be. We'll be piling it. What a wonderful start. Thank you, Maciej. So substantive opposition to it and also emotional opposition to it. So the kind of people who obsess about the government having too much control over our lives and too much say in our lives are often the people who want the government to have loads more control over other people's lives, up to and including deporting people who've got a right to be here. It's a really weird dichotomy, isn't it? It's like the essence of that thing we discovered in the aftermath of the Brexit vote. The I don't mean you brigade. Oh, I voted Brexit to get rid of all the immigrants. Well, your daughter-in-law's an immigrant. Oh, I don't mean you. I voted Brexit to get rid of all the immigrants. Your doctor's an immigrant. Oh, I don't mean you. I voted for Brexit to get rid of all the foreigners. I said, well, you're married to a foreigner. Oh, I don't mean him. Actually, I do. But you've got that on a epic scale here, because the people who are always wanging on about government control and coming up with ludicrous conspiracy theories actually want the government to have the power to round people up and chuck out the ones they don't like. So, how has Keir Starmer managed to turn political gold into political, this is only really going to work with Blackadder fans, into a policy of purest green? And what made you change your mind? I like Maciej's answer, but that won't be the answer that everybody has. Luke's in Bournemouth. Luke, what would you like to say?
Morning, James.
Hello.
I think that it's the wording of it being mandatory is what stopped it being popular. I think inherently people just don't like being told what to do. So I think if it came across as a voluntary system, I think sort of anyone under the age of 30 who has all their bank cards on their phone, then gets ID'd every so often, would go, well, I don't keep my wallet on me anymore because everything's on my phone. An ID on there would be really handy. And then anyone that's had to deal with, you know, sort of solicitors or renting a house or whatever, and they've had to get witnesses to see their signature and stuff like that, they'd all go, well, if I had a digital ID, I could just send the link over. That would be much more convenient as well. So I think in the summer when it was popular, everyone was thinking of those systems. But then when it came out as you have to have this, everyone sort of went, well, why? What are you up to? It makes you more suspicious. I think by enforcing it rather than making it a voluntary system, it instantly makes people second guess your motive.
But wouldn't it be pointless if it wasn't mandatory?
Well, no, not really, because I think it would evolve that everyone would then, you know, get one. So I think, like, I'm not saying everyone's got one, but having a smartphone isn't mandatory, but most people have them now because it's just more convenient. Other people have certain apps that you communicate on, so, like, my nan had a smartphone because she chatted to her grandchildren on WhatsApp. No one's forcing her to, but because it was much more convenient, she went and got a smartphone. I think it would be like that. No one would force you to have it, but a few years down the line, everyone would just go, oh, yeah, it is way better just to have it digital. I'll just get that.
Do you want one? Do you care it's mandatory?
Not really. I don't know. I'd have one just because it would make my life more convenient. But I can see that saying you've got to have one, like, does.
But I don't want driving licenses are mandatory if you want to drive.
Yeah, but you don't have to carry it on you while you drive, so you don't have to have it. like you've got to have one, but you don't have to have it on you.
So the fact that it's on your phone is the problem?
No, I don't. I think
you're speculating on other people's objections rather than describing your own. That's not super helpful. That's not a criticism because we're trying to work it out. I don't know. I mean, the idea of it being voluntary seems to me to render it pointless. But I have to tell you, Andrew thinks you're 100% correct. That's not going to explain. Do you think that how much of the plummeting in popularity do you think that explains?
I think quite a lot. I think then the secondary reason of them saying it will stop illegal working, I think because you're meant to have a national insurance number to work now and people still work illegally.
That's my problem, is that it doesn't... I don't understand how it's supposed to do the thing that they say they're introducing it to do.
Exactly. So then when the people who are, like, a little bit against it hear that, they think, well, that's clearly a lie, so the government must be up to something else. Whereas if it was just a voluntary thing, more people would just get it, and you'd see how it worked out, and then eventually the rollout would just be 99%.
And that's when it kicks in with the crackpots?
Yeah, that's when they join in.
I suppose we need to look at what some of the crackpottery looks like as well, don't we? Thank you for that, Luke. 03456060973 is the number that you need. The anti-Midas touch or the reverse Midas touch element of it is possibly the most amusing. But, of course, some of the reasons that people will have for having reversed their popularity will be completely sensible, like the fact that it's mandatory. What about the fears that people have of what might be done with the information? I suppose I have to own my ignorance on this. I don't worry about people getting hold of my information because I don't know what it is that they're going to do with it. That story about the children's nurseries was horrible. But again, I don't know what is the worst case scenario in these situations. If they take all your money out of your bank account, the bank gives it back to you. I know that sounds naive, and I know there must be more to it than I'm allowing, but that's the point, isn't it? I want you to tell me what it is that I should be worried about. 11:30 is the time. Thomas Watts has your headlines.
The Israeli military says a ceasefire agreement in Gaza is now in effect. IDF troops have begun their withdrawal as part of a deal agreed with Hamas, but they will still be in more than half of the strip. All remaining hostages are due to be released in the coming days in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Stay with LBC for the latest. And Maria Corina Machado has won the Nobel Peace Prize for her work promoting democratic rights in Venezuela. There was speculation Donald Trump had an outside chance of winning. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas. Sunny spells developing through the afternoon. A high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Your daily life often goes like this. With Air France, choose instead.
Wow.
Until the 21st of October, put your daily life on hold. Take advantage of Air France moments and book your flight to Beijing from £499, flying from London Heathrow via Paris. Return including tax. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies. And ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
32 minutes after 11 is the time. We will be wading back into the digital ID debacle, I'm afraid you have to call it, when you look at the effect that announcing the policy has had upon the policy's popularity shortly. But I want to take a moment now just to talk you through some of the elements of Global's Make Some Noise Day. And before I do the sort of official bit, I just want to tell you something personal. It's an extraordinary charity. I mean, it's entirely organic. It was started in this building by my colleagues. And it is designed to do something that hadn't occurred to me needed to be done. What it does is it scoops up all the little charities who can't afford to send people with clipboards out onto the streets to try to sign you up to a regular donation. It scoops up the charities that are run by people who are too busy to fundraise because they're already burning the candle at both ends to keep their services alive. I have met some genuinely extraordinary people. I've been to daycare facilities where children who wouldn't be able to stay in any other daycare facilities are looked after. Children with behavioural issues or special educational needs, not necessarily profound physical disabilities, but just children with the kind of conditions that some people pretend not to understand and just write off as naughty, but which are complicated psychological issues, and they need really careful care. I've met some profoundly disabled children whose parents, I honestly don't know how they keep going. And one of the ways in which they keep going is by calling upon the services of some of the charities that we support, the little charities. And that's why, I despite being sort of professionally quite grumpy and quite cynical, I've never been prouder in my whole career of anything, as much as A, my involvement in this charity, and B, the amount of money that we personally raise by doing our live show every year, and see the impact. I even get to drop off the checks. You know, like footballers back in the day when they'd sign a football, I get to drop off big comedy checks. And sometimes people know they're getting some money, but they're getting twice what they think they were getting. And it makes my heart sing. It's a magical thing. And none of it happens. None of it happens without you. And that is, it sounds glib. It sounds like a bit of a cliche. But my God, it just is true, you know? Whether I'm trying to get some very, very rich person at a fancy do to donate a five-figure sum, or whether I'm encouraging you to donate what you can afford on a day like today, none of it happens without you. The official bit goes like this, and it matters. I want you to listen to this as well, because right now across the country there are many, many people going through unimaginably difficult times. And Make Some Noise is here to support those people facing life's toughest challenges. I'm going to introduce you now to someone who has benefited from your donations, but it's not really her own benefit that prompted us to invite her onto a special edition of Full Disclosure this week. It's the work her charity does looking after other people. It's lifeline support for amputees and those with congenital limb absence of all ages and their families, the support that they get, emotional support, physical support, social support, to help reduce isolation and promote economic and physical independence. You know, a different charity, not this one, not Finding Your Feet, which is based in Scotland, but it was a different charity a few years ago that we were helping out. And I met a young lad who was born with one arm. And the charity provided respite care. That might not be a phrase you're familiar with, or you might just think it applies to cancer. In fact, I've probably used it slightly incorrectly, because what they did was fund weekends away. They'd fund holidays for the entire family. So his sister, who didn't have congenital limb absence, would get to go on this trip as well. And I remember asking what was so special about it? Because, you know, you can go on a trip, you can go to Centre Parks with your family, you don't have to just be in the exclusive company of families who are dealing with a similar disability. And he said the most powerful and beautiful thing. He just said to me, none of us have to explain. It's like the only weekend of the year where his sister doesn't get asked why her brother's only got one arm. It's the only weekend of the year where mum doesn't have to deal with concerned and caring inquiries from other parents. It's the only weekend of the year where he's not the only kid on the climbing frame with one arm or the only kid in the room with one arm. Just such a powerful moment of clarity on why these charities are so important. But they're also tiny. Finding Your Feet is growing. And it needs your support. We are funding an activities program. Global's Make Some Noise is funding an activities program for Finding Your Feet over 2 years to reduce social isolation and improve physical fitness. It was set up by Cor Hutton in 2014. She is one of the most amazing and inspirational people you could ever hope to meet. And her mission in life now is to enhance the lives of fellow Scottish amputees.
The doctor that first morning, you know, it's half past 7 in the morning or something, and there's about 12 people standing around your bed all trying to learn about you, the nurses, the physios, the OTs, you know, even the registrars, and then there's all the consultants and all. So, yeah, about 12 people there, and the main guy says, Cori needs to lose her hands and her feet in 3 days' time, and they start discussing how and why. And
that was the first you'd heard?
Yeah. At that point, I thought they were going to try and test and scan and whatever to try and save them.
Sure.
We thought that's why we were being moved to find some miracle.
But in fact, the decision had already been taken.
Yeah. And I guess that's when you find out that you're not superhuman at all.
Well.
You're just human. That was a low point, I think.
But also, you have subsequently done fairly superhuman things. I don't want to get ahead, but that contrast is almost unbearable, Corinne, because it feels like a guillotine.
I found it very hard to imagine life without hands and feet. I had no idea what that meant. I managed to hold it together till they left the room and then obviously crumbled. And the big thing is you've got no family or anything there at that time. Nobody knows this message is coming. You know, and what can life be like without hands and feet? And I had no idea. And there didn't seem to be anybody who could tell me. The staff, brilliant. NHS, amazing. But they've never been in that situation and they don't know.
Incredible woman, incredible charity, incredible cause, and an incredible opportunity for you to help support it. To donate £40, £30, £20 or £10, all you have to do is text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10, no spaces, LBC40, LBC30, to 70766. It all goes to LBC's Make Some Noise. 100% of your donation, 16 and over only. Please seek the bill payer's permission, and of course standard network charges may apply. Terms and conditions are at makesomenoise.com. So just text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 without any spaces to 70766, and we can get on with the incredibly uplifting and inspiring business of channeling your money to the causes who will be using it to change lives, change young people's lives every day in every corner of the country. Thank you in advance if you are minded to do that. It's 11:40 is the time. I've got a funny update for you. Did you hear yesterday's little clip of Donald Trump not knowing what habeas corpus was? A poor Hungarian peasant girl, he almost said. Well, I'd forgotten that the person he then passed the question on to, like a kind of hospital pass on a rugby field, has a bit of form in this field as well. We'll have a little look at that shortly, but I want to get another call on the digital ID card question. Dave is in Manchester. Dave, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. How are you?
Very well, mate. What's on your mind?
Good. So I work in privacy. I work as a data protection officer, and I've been in this field for a long time, and it's something that it's really close to me.
Yeah.
And I think to answer your question, why has it become so deeply unpopular? And I think one of the reasons is because it's easy to just... Oh, and by the way, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm
That's what they all say. That's what they all say, Dave.
I know, I'm a big believer in believing what scientists and science tells us, and being vaccinated and all of that sort of stuff. Also, I like Keir Starmer. I voted Greens, but I'm happy Labour are in. So, you know, and I like Keir overall. But I think the reason it's so unpopular is because it's easy to just relegate this and say it's for the conspiracy theorists. And the thing is, they jump on all these like crazy ideas. But the thing is with this one is that there is something that we should be concerned about here. And there's a massive intellectual part of the community that have been worried about this for years. And
yes.
If you think about like the advent of Bitcoin and Satoshi and the cyberpunks back in the 80s, and that you know, they were worried about privacy and being tied to financial freedom.
I didn't know that.
So there was a massive group of intellectuals called the cypherpunks. And they were made up of like Intel physicists, mathematicians, you know, professors, and they were deeply concerned about the advent of digital IDs being tied to our currency. But the reason there's a concern here, and there's a few things I want to touch on. First of all, we give up a lot of our privacy to our smartphones. Okay, they compromise our privacy. But there's a couple of things here. First of all, that privacy that we compromise, it's fragmented. So Google knows what I Google, and my bank knows what I spend my money on, and Facebook knows what I look at. But there's not a centralized entity that oversees everything that I do.
No, but this wouldn't do that.
Well, it would, because these IDs will tie you legally, biometrically, to who...
The only time I'd ever have to get it out is if I was applying for a new job.
Well, this is what you think, Mike. This is where
You said you weren't a conspiracy theorist.
I'm not.
Okay, I'll say it again. The only time I'd ever need it. So I think the earlier caller was wrong when he said you have to have it with you all the time. There was Warren puts it like this. There's an easy explanation about why the popularity fell following the announcement. Disinformation. It was immediately shared, even by many usually sensible people. There will be no requirement to have the digital ID on you at any point. The only mandatory element is to use it is within a right to work check.
Yes, but here's the thing. James. Right. So this is.
Don't do slippery slope, Dave.
I understand that it's a slippery slope. I honestly get that. But the truth is, there's something called central bank digital currencies, and these have been in development for years. And you can Google this. And the UK is one of the countries.
But it's got nothing to do with us. It's got nothing to do. You've gone full conspiracy theory.
I'm not.
You have.
Check this out.
When people say you can Google this and check this out, I'm asking about a thing. I have to show to an employer to prove I have a right to be in this country. It's got nothing to do with digital Watsy Marky cyberfunks.
No, there are a couple of things here. Digital.
Last chance, Dave. Yellow card. It when I apply for a new job. It's got nothing to do with digital cyber currencies.
Okay. So let's ignore that. Okay. Let's say that isn't coming.
No, but that's a conspiracy theory. Don't make me be a meanie.
Okay.
Don't make me be a meanie, Dave. What is the problem with a digital ID that I have to produce? You can't answer the question until I've finished asking it.
I am.
No, you can't. No,
here is
a thing. I have to, like, my national insurance number, but digitized. What's the problem?
Because, right, you can't step out of the system, right?
I can't step out of the national insurance system.
Yeah, but for now, it's just...
So then we said no slippery slope, no slippery slope. No, it is, you've gone there. You've done it. I'm getting messages calling me a shill now. So there is, you've got no objection to what has been announced.
Okay, so here's another slippery slope.
No, I don't want to hear any more slippery slope.
Why do we need this, right? You've got to ask the question. We already have checks and balances in to stop illegal immigrants get work.
Well, they're not working.
But why do we need this?
Because they're not working. You could say this one won't work either, to which the response would be, well, we could at least try it. So I think I know the answer to this, and I think, sadly, you do too. Do you have any objections whatsoever to the detail of what has actually been announced, or are all of your fears based on things that have not been announced?
My fears are based on things that have not been announced. Yeah,
okay,
correct.
Well, that's because a conspiracy theory. It's 11:46.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Proposal from the Home Secretary as to new police powers to crack down on repeat protests. Shabana Mahmood is Home Secretary, of course. What is the utility right now in forcing the police to arrest vicars and 89-year-olds for just holding up a placard?
I'm afraid whether you're a vicar or an 89-year-old or indeed anybody else, if you're holding up a placard that is supporting a proscribed organisation, you are breaking the law of our land.
Listen
Johnson on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Neil Basu, his thoughts, former assistant commissioner of the Met. Do you think that will be welcomed by the police?
While protests are a cornerstone of our liberal democracy, if they continue to go on and suck police officers into the protests themselves, then they're not going to have regular core policing in their community.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Early Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies. And ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
It is 11:49. James, you're supposed to be a journalist. Can you listen to what the public are saying? Look at the government's past record. If you class everything as a conspiracy, we'd never be able to analyse anything properly. Yada, 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 yada. Listen, you can explain your objections to things that haven't been announced, if you want, but go and explain it to your pillow. I'm looking for objections to what has been announced, which is very, very simply an authentication card to prove that you are entitled to work in this country. That's all it is. If it was on a piece of paper, people are saying it would be absolutely fine. But if it's on my phone, it doesn't even have to be on your phone. You only need to produce it when you're applying for a new job. There was a wonderful little thing on Blue Sky by one of the my favourite people that I follow on there, who's he's a bit of a polymath, actually, musician, comedian. He's called Joel Morris. And this is my answer to you, Peter, when you suggest that we should listen more to the public. He writes, they should just stop polling and stick with the big one we had in 2016 that revealed roughly half of us will believe any old toot. And you know, the idea that because lots of people believe something that's not true, you should pay more attention to it. The opposite is true. My job is to ignore what people think if it's based on misinformation and find out what the real information is. So, what am I supposed to object to? And the question I really wanted you to answer was not, yeah, but they might bring in this other thing that they're not bringing in, but if they did, it would be terrible. I've done my own research. You should Google it. Cyber something, something, something currency. I want to know why Keir Starmer has managed to make something so popular, so unpopular, so quickly. It could be that that is the answer to the question. Did the misinformation and the propaganda, well, not propaganda, the mad conspiracy theories explode after he announced it? So anybody who's online has been exposed to the kind of toot that that we're now being exposed to. I honestly don't know. And the other problem I've got is my excessive modesty. is I honestly think, I'm trying to work out why I don't feel all the things that you're telling me I should feel. Not you, but some people. And I just don't think I'm important enough. This might be incredibly naive. It might be dangerously naive. But the idea that by carrying a digital ID, they're going to be able to do things to me that I don't want them to do, just seems to me to be a little bit ridiculous, you know? And I say that knowing what Donald Trump is doing to critics in the United States of America, but his ability to do it hasn't been increased or decreased by dint of digital IDs. I don't even know whether they have them or not. And guess what? Nor do you. I just don't think I'm important. I wonder whether there's a link between subscribing to conspiracy theories and having slightly exaggerated ideas of your own importance in the great scheme of things. Like Farage, objecting to having an Oyster card because, quotes, they, end quotes, might know where he was going. I've got two thoughts on that. Well, where are you going that you don't want people to know? And what are you up to? And the second one is, well, we've got automatic number plate recognition in this country. So if you're going to go somewhere by car, they can find you in a heartbeat, in a nanosecond. I just don't know what it is that people have been so spooked by. B's in Bedford. B, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Lovely to speak to you again.
Hello, B.
So I'm going to give you my silly answer first. My silly answer is actually Brexit, because before Brexit, an ID card would have been jolly handy, because yes, I could have then travelled around without my passport. We yes, can't do that anymore. They took that away from us. But my more serious answer is I think it's because it's a Labour government. So if you're about the same age as me, so if you cast your mind back, it was proposed in the previous Labour government, never got very far. Prior to
David
that,
Blunkett,
though,
wasn't it?
Yes, exactly. Mm. And prior to that, there was talk about having a voluntary ID card, because if you were sort of a younger person, you had to find all sorts of funny ways of proving how old you were. And they talked about having a national ID card. And obviously it wasn't digital back then, because sure, we didn't have digital services. But I think it was a voluntary thing back then. But I think this idea of compulsion is the problem. I think we're hardwired.
This is where I get left behind a bit.
Well, think about COVID, right? Think about COVID. Yeah. If we had instigated a mandatory vaccination program, you'd have had all kinds of kick-up for it.
But if some buts were pots and pans, there'd be no need of tinkers. Apologies to anybody who finds that phraseology offensive.
But that's the thing, though. See, if you when you're saying to people, well, if you have this, you can then go to Australia to see the grandkids, they're like, stick it all in my arm, I'm happy with that. But yeah, as soon as you say it's mandatory, people then get this weird idea that somehow you're taking something away.
Lots of things are mandatory.
I know, exactly. I actually disagree with this completely.
I've got people speculating on why others are opposed to it, or I've got conspiracy theorists. There doesn't seem to be anything in between.
I mean, I don't actually
oppose it. Where's
that
Davey when you need him? Where's that Davey when you need him? Where the sensible... Ian Dunt has written a brilliant piece about why I shouldn't like it, but I still, and I usually change my mind completely according to anything Ian Dunt writes, but I got to the end of that piece. I thought, God, that's a brilliant piece. He's good. Wish I could write like that. But I didn't change my mind about anything.
No. I think the problem with the idea of the digital ID card is because we don't know enough about it. Fundamentally, there's enough space for all of these conspiracies to come in, and even someone like me, who's quite happy with it,
yeah,
I would be quite easily going, "Ooh, is that something I need to be worried about now?" It's because we don't know enough.
That's the funny bit, though, isn't it? In the current climate, particularly online, and indeed post-COVID, if you had to come up with something most guaranteed to inflame the fruitcakes, loonies and crackpots, then telling them we're introducing a mandatory digital ID card. They should have done? They should have stuck the letters WEF on it somewhere, just to absolutely boil the brains of the sort of half-wits and weirdos who are committed to these kind of conspiracies. But there's nothing here that I have to be frightened of. Nothing at all.
Well, I don't think there's anything that most people have to be frightened of other than not knowing what it is. That's all. So what we need is more
information. It's a thing.
Them.
It's a number that digitized. I mean, numbers are digitized already, aren't they? I suppose technically they're digits after all. But I just here is B. interviewing me for a job, and at the end of it, probably even before we've started, she offers it me because I'm a brilliant candidate and says, can I just see your digital ID? And I go, yeah, here it is. And she goes, fine, that's absolutely cool, can't be faked, absolutely wonderful. And somehow this has been allowed to evolve.
The flip side of that, well, the trouble is, the flip side is, when I go for an interview, I still have to, I already produce my passport,
These are valid objections, that it doesn't necessarily seem set to do the things that it's designed to do.
I suppose. Yes. From my point of view, it just feels a little redundant. And also, if I go back to my earlier point, especially in line of Brexit, because that would have been something useful, that I don't have to take my passport, I can have my digital ID everywhere I go, and that then I can move around with freedom. I can't do that now. That feels a bit redundant.
Yeah, I hear you. That's an interesting point. The Irish passport, you can get it in credit card form, you know. So that's already sorted. Sorry. I'm just boasting now. Sam's in Leeds. Last word on this, Sam. Are you here to speculate upon the opinions of people that are not actually you, or are you a conspiracy theorist, or are you the mythical Holy Grail caller who has sensible objections to the detail that has actually been announced?
Well, James, I am concerned about the cost implications of it and the cost-benefit analysis of it, whether or not it's actually worth spending money on something that's not going to really make much of a difference.
That's a good old-fashioned pre-internet objection. We can't afford it.
Yeah, I mean, we can see the public services falling apart around us.
We can.
And we're coming up spending money on something that's, I don't really think it's going to make that much of a difference to our lives.
You're the winner.
Is it worth it?
You're the winner. There you go. That's a perfect... But that doesn't explain why it's gone from popular to unpopular in the blink of an eye, does it?
Well, no. And I do think that Stam is doing it maybe for a little bit of political reasons. You know, he's trying to get some sort of edge around immigration to do with it, you know.
That's true. That's true. I agree with you on that.
Is it worth the fine? And everything quadruples in this country. So the budget, they say, oh, it's going to cost this.
Except their wages.
Yeah, yeah. But in the end, it's... You know, we can all see the newspaper article now. Oh, the cost of this is now gone up tenfold. And you think, well, yeah. And what's it actually done? Nothing.
Do you want to know something? I've got some good news and some bad news.
Yeah.
Which do you want first?
Oh, start with the good.
That is a really sensible, thoughtful and plausible contribution to the programme.
Thanks. Thoughts are bad.
Yeah. It's rubbish phoning. I want more crackpots.
Is it? Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sensible, calm, down-to-earth, informed, plausible, feasible and intelligent.
I'll drag out my tinfoil now and I'll ring you back.
No, I'm joking. I'm not joking, actually, but that perhaps is the reason, is that it appeals to a certain type of personality. Sam's objections will not. That's just sort of me sitting here, stroking my chin, going, oh, yeah, that's a good point. It's not me sitting here going, they're coming to get me! And the digital ID card is like a big net. It's going to be like the child catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And Keir Starmer, that is going to make a lot more noise on social media, isn't it? It's going to get a lot more clicks and giggles. And that, of course, is the world that we live in. It is all about drawing attention to yourself on social media. And if you're not going to do that by saying, well, this is a bit rich for my blood, looks a bit dear. No one's going to click on Sam. They're going to click on the bloke saying, oh, and the next thing they'll come for is your feet. Or the next thing they'll come for is your children. If you tolerate this, they'll say, your children will be next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Israeli forces have withdrawn to lines agreed in Donald Trump's plan for Gaza. The ceasefire has now taken effect, giving Hamas 72 hours to free the remaining Israeli hostages. Israel will release hundreds of Palestinian prisoners in return. Blake Sifton is LBC's correspondent in Tel Aviv.
We understand that the Israeli military completed their pullout of the areas in Gaza they've left under cover of shell fire, so under tank fire and artillery to essentially provide cover for their withdrawal. But now that they have completed that withdrawal, the ceasefire is officially on. We've seen footage of Palestinians beginning to flow north back to areas they fled ahead of or during the Israeli offensive to seize and occupy Gaza City. They had been waiting along the coastal road, waiting for the go-ahead. And now that the ceasefire is officially underway, people are heading north.
Trucks are expected to start delivering aid into Gaza. The Foreign Secretary, Yvette Cooper, has told LBC that supplies must be distributed as soon as possible.
We have had 2 years of this unimaginable suffering in Gaza, in the Middle East, and 2 years of families waiting for hostages to come home, tens of thousands of lives being lost in Gaza. So it's just urgent that this comes now to an end.
The Venezuelan opposition leader and pro-democracy campaigner Maria Corina Machado has been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. The judges said it is crucial to recognize courageous defenders of freedom who rise and resist. It follows speculation Donald Trump may have had an outside chance of winning. Thousands of people have lined the streets of Manchester to pay their respects to Ricky Hatton.
It's just so sad. We've lost a legend today.
He was, you know, always regarded as a man of the people. You know, he was the local lad, done good.
I've met him a few times. Met him a few times in Iden Denton in the pubs. Always had a smile on his face. Always polite. He's one of ours, isn't he?
A funeral service is just beginning for the former boxing world champion who died last month, aged 46. And it is Global's Make Some Noise Day. All of our stations, including Classic FM, Heart and Capital, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like Ted, who after a difficult childhood ended up getting involved in County Line's drugs running. He managed to turn things around with the support of the group Achieve, Thrive, Flourish, funded by Global's Make Some Noise.
I went to jail when I was 13. It was probably the best thing that could have happened because I got put on youth offending. And that's where I met a woman from ATF called Vicky. I started volunteering, teaching little football sessions and things like that. ATF have also paid for me to get all my qualifications with coaching badges.
And so far, you've helped us to raise £2,557,924. So thank you. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was down 13 points at 94.99. The pound buys $1.32 and the euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern areas, sunny spells developing later, a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe. And improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Four minutes after 12 is the time. Allow me to encourage you once again, particularly if you're just joining us, to make a donation to LBC's Make Some Noise. It's our official charity, and it's not just one of those geezers on the radio hitting some numbers or hitting some lines. Many of us are quite passionately involved in it, very passionately supportive of it. I'll be doing a live episode of Full Disclosure on stage in London in February that is exclusive. I mean, I don't get paid. All the money raised goes, 100% goes to the charity. Did it with Carol Vorderman last year. We've done it with Keir Starmer in the past. Did it with the most wonderful woman that I think I've ever had ring into the show. Don't get jealous. She was really special. Lily Pullman, who I've been thinking about an awful lot lately, a Holocaust survivor who dedicated her life to trying to build bridges between communities that would otherwise be at each other's throats. And that's why I do it, because the charity is so incredible. It also it directs all its attention at children. And you might not know this, right? But you know someone who is going through hell, possibly with their child's health, possibly with their child's mental health. It is such a lonely path that people go down. And the country we live in, I think all countries, I don't think it's unique to this one, still attaches stigma and difficulty to invisible conditions, whether it is a particularly profound neurodiversity, whether it is a behavioural issue or disorder, whatever it may be. I mean, it's bad enough having to turn the radio on and hear people describing it as just being naughty, for example. And I'm afraid I used to be one of those people, but I know a hell of a lot more about it now, thanks largely to you, than I did then. And I know that the chances of someone you know, or certainly someone in your child's class, or someone you know going through, someone's away from school a lot, that they'll be going through things that you don't know about. And the only people that can help them sometimes, and I know it's a space the state should be filling, but it isn't. The waiting lists are off the chart. It's the little charities, the tiny little charities that provide a safety net when everything else has failed. And, and some of the stories we hear from the people whose lives, the two things you hear, relief and gratitude. Relief that there was somewhere to turn to, and gratitude that you found it. And of course, a lot don't, because as I keep telling you, these are charities that are run by people who are too busy running charities to run fundraising, which is where we come in. Doing all sorts of work with all sorts of charities, and none of it happens without you. And this is how you help. Are you ready? To donate £40, £30, £20 or £10, just text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20, or, wait for it, yep, you got it, LBC10, no spaces, just LBC40, LBC30. And send it to 70766. Not the usual number, but 70766. 100% of your donation goes to Make Some Noise. 16 and over only. Please seek the bill payer's permission. Standard network charges may apply. You can find all the T's and C's at makesomenoise.com. So just again, because I really want you to do this, because the more of you that do, then the more children we can help. LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10. And send it to 70766. Got quite a lot to get through this hour, but there's two funny things I want to do with you. I can't do them, though, until we've got the next phone in up and running. And I saw a headline, and my first thought was, have we done this recently? Because I love this topic, and I think it's really important. But I do recognise that when I really love something, and I think it's really important, I have a tendency perhaps to do it too often. But we haven't done this for ages. The headline read on Tuesday of this week, "Working Class White Boys Shun Reading." And it breaks my heart. A quarter of white working class boys do not spend any time reading outside school. Not a minute. Nothing at all. It's their parents who are more likely to feel disillusioned with their child's school than other groups, and only a third think good grades at GCSE level are important for success. That's pretty grim, right? Farage is giving speeches in America at the moment about how awful schools are and how awful teachers are. And, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again, he knows exactly what he's doing, consigning people to a lifetime of ignorance and anger by demonising education. Extraordinary. But these are the results. I mean, it works. You've heard radio phone-in hosts do it. Every time a teacher goes on strike, any kid listening could be forgiven for thinking that teachers are their enemies rather than their friends. But reading, that's what I want to focus on. We'll probably talk next week about some of the broader ramifications of the assault upon education itself. But reading. I don't know why they've focused on ethnicity, but it seems to be the flavour of the moment, doesn't it? I spoke to about 4,000 people, parents and children. 25% of white working class boys had never read a book, a comic or a magazine in any given week. The overall figure was 13%. Oh. And the two things in all of the years I've been doing this job that make me maddest when it comes to using middle class as a pejorative are food and reading. It's such a self-defeating position to adopt. Jamie was on Full Disclosure last week, and Jamie's working class credentials, not something he makes a lot of fuss and noise about, but you know, by the time his dad's pub was up and running, they were comfortably off, but he's not from a fancy pants background by any stretch of the imagination, but he loves food. He tells a story about having a couple of mates at school who were from the traveller community and who had not been exposed to particularly healthy food. And he just, it was because he'd worked in the kitchen at the family pub in Essex from, I mean, probably before it was legal. I think they used to pay him in potatoes. But the, what he wanted to do was share some of his passion. He had a terrible, terrible time at school. He's spoken to you about his dyslexia. You know all about that. And yet he kept his head up throughout it because he had this astonishing relationship and gift for food and gift for cooking. And he tells a wonderful story about giving some smoked salmon to these lads from the traveller community. And you know, just a little bit of smoked salmon, top quality butter, best butter, my mum would call it. Does anyone else's mum call it best butter? What's second best butter? Is it like margarine, or would you have two different grades of butter? My mum still says it. I was home a couple of weekends ago, and I was making her a sandwich, and I, just as a joke, I said, do you want best butter on it, mum? And it really good butter, nice bread, and then some smoked salmon and a squeeze of lemon, and a little twist of black pepper. Now, smoked salmon's not cheap, but the transformation on the lad's faces, it's a lovely story. I've heard him tell it a couple of times, and that's how I feel about books. So I'm not as good a cook as Jamie Oliver. Yeah, I don't take free kicks like David Beckham either. But that's how I feel about books. Is the idea of going through life without books, I find it heartbreaking. And I'm not having a go at you if you just don't like them, if you've tried and just it doesn't work for you, you prefer other things. I'm talking about the kids who never get to taste it. Never get to taste smoke. They don't have a mate like Jamie Oliver who will just introduce them to something that they've not been introduced to before, and they would never get introduced to it either. And it's not going to be your mum and dad, because your mum and dad think that school's a waste of time and that GCSEs are for the birds. And I don't know how you do it, because I can't give you a taste of smoked salmon. I can't give these white working class lads a book. I don't know how you do it. But we have to try harder. And one way of doing it, I think, because I don't know that there'll be school-age children who've never read a book listening to this, but parents who don't think it's important might be. And I want to some, and the reason why I tie it in with food is because they both get labelled middle class. You can hear some of these parents whose children have never read a book describing it as middle class or posh or woke, probably. Books are probably woke now, are they, in some corners of our communities? Smoked salmon certainly is. But what is your story? So I don't contribute to this conversation. My parents were the opposite of this. Books were everywhere growing up. Weren't rich, but there were books in the house, and we went to the library all the time. I realise now it was free childcare. Mum could go shopping, leave me in the library, and I'd still be there. I'd still be engaged when she got back, and safe, of course, and warm and dry. So I'm not in this phone-in. I've got nothing with this one. I want to know what it's like to discover reading, to discover books later. So your class is not massively important to this, but if you are from a poorer background, you are more likely not to have had books. Just more likely. If you are white working class today, you are less likely to be reading than everybody else in the country. A white working class boy, less likely to be reading than everybody else in the country. And for me, I mean, we're not going to have a debate about this. I'd include audio books. I'd also include comics and anything really that has the written word on it. But if you didn't get it in your childhood, how did you get it? What happened? And what difference did it make? That's it. That's the phone in, all right? You didn't get books in your childhood. Reading wasn't a big thing for you in your childhood. Parents' fault? Teachers' fault? Whose fault? Anyone's fault. So you got there later in life. I want to know how you got there later in life, and I want to know what difference it made, all right? 0345 6060973 is the number that you need. So you're one of these kids. You were one of these kids. You realize it now. Maybe you didn't realize it until I started wanging on. I didn't get it. I didn't realise that other people, other children were going to the library all the time. Other people had books all the time. I can't remember not reading. I think, before I even got to school. Early reader. Not showing off. It's just true. Just to highlight why I can't contribute much to this conversation except the questions. So you got it later in life. And you can tell me what difference it made to you. Because I'm taking it for granted from day one. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need, okay? And that's the question. How did you get into reading if it didn't happen for you during childhood? And what happened when you did? It's 1217.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
At Specsavers, we've got hearing devices that can stream music or movies. And ones that are good in crowds. Rechargeable battery ones. Ones that are good at home. Ones that are good in the great outdoors. Ones that connect to phones. Ones that fit in your ear. Ones that fit over your ear. And ones that fit in wherever you happen to be. We've even got ones in our advanced range that use AI to make speech sound clearer. And they're all available at great Specsavers prices. Book a free hearing check today.
Early bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
I mean, look, on the other hand, you can rise to enormously important roles in the world despite never having read a book in your life. So, class is the crucial thing. If you're from a rich family and you've never read a book, you're going to end up, you're going to be okay. You're probably, I mean, you could even end up president of the United States of America without knowing so I'm just going to do this and then we'll talk to Danny who's in Grimsby because I just thought it was really funny. I played you this yesterday and it shows Donald Trump not knowing what habeas corpus is. And not just not knowing what it is, but wondering, well, you listen to yourself.
Have you given any more thought to possibly suspending habeas corpus to not only deal with these insurrectionists across the nation, but also to continue rapidly deporting illegal aliens?
Yeah, is suspending who?
Habeas corpus, sir.
Oh, I don't know. I'd rather leave that to Christie. What do you think?
No, sir, I haven't been a part of any discussions on that.
Sorry, suspending who? It's like that Tony, what's his chops sketch about Magna Carta, isn't it? I love it. It's a bit of a poor Hungarian peasant girl. Anyway, that's Kirsty Noem, who is his Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem. So that's the person that he turns to for help with habeas corpus, who he seems to think is a person rather than a sort of legal principle. What I forgot yesterday was that she has form in this field. She was at a Senate hearing not long ago, a Homeland Security Committee hearing, where the Homeland Security Secretary was asked about one of the most fundamental principles of Western jurisprudence. And this happened.
The Trump administration is actively looking at suspending habeas corpus. Last week you were asked about this, and I want to clarify your position because it's obviously really important to get this right. So, Secretary Noem, what is habeas corpus?
Well, habeas corpus is a constitutional right that the president has to be able to remove people from this country
That's incorrect. Habeas corpus is the legal principle that requires that the government provide a public reason for detaining and imprisoning people. If not for that protection, the government could simply arrest people, including American citizens, and hold them indefinitely for no reason.
I support habeas corpus. I also recognize that the President of the United States has the authority under the Constitution to decide if it should be suspended or not.
It has never
Let
been,
us be clear, though,
it has never been done. It has never been done without approval of Congress. Even Abraham Lincoln got retroactive approval from Congress.
Oh, boy. That's the Homeland Security Secretary not even knowing what it was. But at least she knew it was a legal principle and not an actual person.
Have you given any more thought to possibly suspending habeas corpus to not only deal with these insurrectionists across the nation, but also to continue rapidly deporting illegal aliens?
Yeah, is suspending who?
Habeas corpus, sir.
Oh, I don't know. I'd rather leave that to Christie. What do you think?
Habeas corpus, did she die in vain? Tony Hancock. I forgot his name a minute ago. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I haven't got time to explain. Read a book, guys. Danny's in Grimsby. Books, Danny, reading, and the differences they make. What can you tell me?
Hi, James. Just want to say, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
Thank you. This has quite literally changed my life. I was raised, you know, in a classic working class cell. My mum and dad on factories and supermarkets and that, and on the docks, and didn't have reading as an important thing. They didn't really have much interest in school growing up because of dyslexia and other sort of difficulties. So that's
going to try and sort. I'm just going to try and fix up your phone line because you've already sucked me into this story, and I want to make sure that I can hear all of it. I'll just go to Stuart in Blackpool, but we'll definitely be talking to Danny in Grimsby as well. Stuart, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Can you hear me properly?
Loud and clear, mate.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. You don't know me, but you know my son, actually. You read out a letter that he sent you a number of years ago on my birthday. a lad called Fenton.
Go on. I remember the name. Remind me why I read it out.
Because he sent you an email basically saying that I was a massive fan. I started listening to you around Brexit time, and I didn't actually get to read the letter myself. But you just were talking about how delightful he was. You don't normally do this kind of thing.
I don't actually. That's true. That proves it, doesn't it?
It's absolutely proven. I want to thank you for that, first of all. That was amazing. It made my 40th birthday. It really did. It was brilliant. secondly, reading, again, like the first caller mentioned, working class background, was never really pushed to accomplish anything as a child. My parents were proud of me no matter what I did, which was nothing. I grew up with no ambition, no real future. I just did sort of random jobs, not really getting anywhere. Until Brexit became a thing, and I needed to make a decision which could be quite life-changing. So I started doing research. I started listening to things on YouTube. I then saw James O'Brien on YouTube and started listening, researching. And then I started reading more and more, and then I started reading about politics, and then my partner, Zara, amazing person, bought me the first Game of Thrones book, and I thought, what am I going to do with this?
You'd never read for pleasure in your life?
No, never. Not really. The odd book, but I never really got into it. So, I never really found my thing.
Sure.
And then I read it, and from that day I was hooked. I was just absolutely hooked. Started reading historical fiction.
Read. Just one tickle is all it took.
That was it, yeah. So I would read constantly at work, sort of. When I had 5 minutes, I'd pick the book up. Yeah, I'd read a book every couple of weeks. I just loved it.
And changed?
Sorry?
What changed? How did it change your life? If it did?
It gave me the confidence to go to uni.
Whoa.
Because I always thought I couldn't go to uni because I couldn't do the reading.
Right.
And it gave me the confidence. So when I was 38, I started a degree in network engineering, and which I passed. And now I run an IT help desk. which I absolutely love. It's just completely changed my life. It's
That's extraordinary, and passing it on to the next generation as well. I mean, what would Fintan's life have been like if you hadn't been on that journey yourself? Completely different, right?
Well, luckily my partner Zara is quite.
She'd have looked after that side of things, but
yeah, exactly. Finn was already more intelligent than me by that point anyway, so...
I love this. I also love the message I just got off Matt. He says, James, we found the only benefit of Brexit. Someone ring Rees Mogg. it's literally you. That is extraordinary. You are this story incarnate, aren't you? It's not as if anyone's to blame. No one's made a conscious decision to kind of... plug up your ears and stop you from accessing stuff. But until you get that moment, in your case, Zara giving you that book, probably because she knew you so well and she knew what you liked and she knew what you liked watching and she knew that would probably just get wheels turning inside you that had never turned before.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's incredible. Mate, take
and
care.
I think it's just finding your niche, finding that one thing.
Yes, exactly. That's it. That's why I started with Jamie Blumin' Oliver and a piece of smoked salmon, because it can happen anywhere. Anyone can do it. But if it doesn't happen, it never happens. Oh, what a lovely story. Thank you, Stuart. I presume I'll get another letter when your 50th comes around. Danny is in Grimsby. Back to Danny. So, just, I think, never read a book by 19. Danny, just didn't happen. Same as Stuart.
Yeah, same thing. And I thought, I'm going to go to the library and I'm going to get a small book and I'm going to...
Why did you think that?
Why did I think what, sorry?
That day, why did you decide to go to the library?
Because I felt... So at that age, you know, your friends, they go to college and uni and they say what they know they want to do, and I had no clue at all. I was quite terrified. And I just was working and ignoring a lot of them big questions. And I thought, well, I got to do something. So I started long distance running, but I also went to the library. And I picked
you didn't read The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner by Alan Sillitoe, by any chance.
Great film.
It is a great film.
But I can segue into that because I got The Old Man and the Sea.
Oh.
And I picked it up and I started... And I was like, I'm going to see how far I can go here. And I couldn't put it down. I finished it in a wanna. And I was like, oh, that was good. Oh, that was really good. That made me want to go again. So I went to the library and just got as many as I could out and just went mad for it.
Isn't that incredible? Both you and Stuart, almost like a sort of, like a dam that broke. Yeah. And once it broke, that was it. You were away.
But then it changed a lot because then... I thought, oh, I like stories. Oh, I quite want to work in stories. I'd like to tell them. And I like reading them and all that. So then I started on a journey to get into the film and TV industry, which was a bit foreign.
Of course.
To my world and all that. And I had to move away and be the first one to do all that. But books gave me a real core of like a confidence and protection in that. And now, you know, I work in the film and TV industry, which is the bizarrest thing to say ever. But
that's lovely. Stories. Everything. Well, you're a storyteller. You just didn't realise it.
And we all are, is the thing. And the thing that breaks my heart hearing what you were saying is them kids don't know what they don't know. And I was that, you know.
That's
and
a great
it
phrase.
Feel
you don't know what you don't know. I love that. I love that. That's wonderful. It's also, what a touch, though, to start off with the Hemingway. I mean, that is just magnificent.
I was spoiled.
And you chose it because it was short, right? It's a really thin book. It's one of the thinnest books in the library.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was getting in for. But it kind of summed up the next 10 years of my life, that pursuit and that brutality and that of changing and adapting and having to say goodbye to a lot of things, like the safety of the bubble of the working class sort of world that I was in, where the expectations were, you know, being proud of regardless. But I wanted somewhat more, and that book gave me that feeling. And I think if it was a different book, I might have put it down, but it played to a lot.
It's the planets aligning, Danny. It's the place, that stage of your life, the right book, the right time, and the right... Oh, mate, you're going to make me get quite emotional. And it's, I always get emotional on Make Some Noise Day, but it is, like you say, heartbreaking to read that a quarter of your peers, a quarter of white working class boys today don't spend any time at all reading outside school. And you know, if it's not going to get imbued in them in childhood, you're going to have to be very, very lucky, like Danny or like Stuart, to find the bug, to find the bug later in life. But two stories. When you do, everything changes. Here's Tim Humphrey with your headlines.
Israel's military is pulling back in Gaza after the country agreed to the first stage of a peace plan late last night. A ceasefire came into effect at 10 a.m. UK time. All the hostages held by Hamas are due to be released in the coming days. This year's Nobel Peace Prize has gone to Venezuela's opposition leader, who's recently been forced into hiding. The committee praised Maria Corina Machado for not leaving the country despite facing death threats. The funeral of boxer Ricky Hatton is taking place in Manchester, with thousands of people gathering on the streets to pay their respects. A cortege is making its way through the city to Manchester Cathedral, where a private memorial service will be held. LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts, some sunny spells developing later, a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Imagine the varifocal lens of the future, personalised to you, engineered with artificial intelligence and powered by your visual behaviour. Experience instantly sharp vision in motion with Varilux XR Pro lenses from Essilor. Find your local optician at essilor.com and ask for Varilux XR Pro.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today. And hang on, is that Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
I've looked after my kids since they were born. Now they've got kids, I still want to look after them. I don't want them struggling to make decisions about my money or my health if I can't. So we made a lasting power of attorney. Now, if I can't speak for myself, they'll speak for me. It's a weight off for all of us, isn't it?
Yes, Mum.
Lasting power of attorney. Search your voice, your decision.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Text 84850.
12:34 is the time. As you know, today is Make Some Noise Day on LBC and right across the global family. I want to introduce you now to the kind of one of the charities that we work to support, and the kind of charity to which your donation can make a huge difference. Boxing Futures is a charity that supports isolated children and young people in Peterborough and in London, many of them from deprived communities. The programme that we're funding this year is called Chatterbox, which looks at the physical and mental health of 60 of those young people. No contact, non-contact boxing sessions, group therapy sessions, group activities, and one-to-one counselling sessions. In a moment, we'll meet two young people who have been supported already by Chatterbox. But first, Jamie is the operations manager at the sort of parent charity, Boxing Futures. Just maybe start by giving us a picture of one of the young people that you've helped and the kind of impact that Chatterbox intervention can have on their lives, Jamie.
Yeah, so at Boxing Futures, what we try and do is create a pathway, and actually Chatterbox, it's a pathway of programs that support young people in social and emotional growth, and the physical and therapeutic process that we follow allows that growth. For some of the young people that we've worked with, in fact, the group that these guys have been part of, from the start of the program to the end, 18 of those young people have now gone on to be employed or in training or education, which is something that would have been fairly difficult for them to have done at the beginning of that process.
Why boxing?
Boxing, well, I think because of the physical, I think the idea of you can go in and get that support, you can kind of go in to a gym, and that's where it kind of started from. And it's very well known, isn't it, that those young people that we're trying to access have spoken over the years about the impact that boxing had and the discipline and the support that they got on a one-to-one, but more importantly, on a group level. And I think when this first started, that was the kind of idea. What can we do? Not just with the boxing, but that physical benefit that young people can get from that exercise.
I love it. Oliver, how did you end up there?
Well, actually, my mum passed away.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, last year. And I went to the college for help, and then they recommended me to Boxing Futures after a couple of weeks of helping me.
What did you think when they said, we're going to send you to a boxing gym?
A bit nervous at first, because, like, my anxiety when going to, like, a gym or something like that.
Of course.
It would be horrible. Yeah.
I understand.
And when I actually got to the boxing, I met a few people, like, and I've... It was very nice.
What kind of difference has it made? What do you do when you're there, and can you measure the difference that it's made? Made you feel less lonely, less alone?
Yeah, and I feel more comfortable, completely more confident, because I don't think I'll be able to speak on the microphone like a year ago like I am now.
You just nicked my question. I was literally about to say, would you have been bossing the microphone in a studio like this 2 years
Never.
Ago? That's incredible. Melissa, what brought you to their door?
I had just moved to the UK from Uganda, so I was just having trouble, like, connecting with people, learning the different accents and understanding people. So, like, my mom was like, why don't you try some extracurricular activities outside, maybe get some friendships outside of college, because I was having trouble making friends in college. So it was a freshers event, and they introduced me to Boxing Futures. So the first time I was like, boxing? I told my mom maybe I should try boxing, and she was like, well, when I say try extracurriculars, I
this
didn't mean
what
boxing.
I had in mind.
Yeah, and I was like, but wouldn't you love me to be like, it is non-contact, so like, you've been telling me to exercise more. It ticked so many boxes that, like, at the end, she just had to accept. But it's like, the first time I didn't go because I was so scared. Second time I went, and I was like, it's so much easier than I expected, because everyone was just so welcoming, and they're like, whatever you do outside, it doesn't matter. It's like you shed the person you're outside, and just everyone just welcomes you as you are. And I know, like, what I'm saying, it's a mix of so many different young individuals that it gives a better perspective on so many things.
How long had you been in the room before you felt something inside you just relax?
Probably like 5 minutes.
Wow. That's what you're going for, Jamie. That sense of, I'm okay here. This is sort of family almost.
Yeah, it's like what you want to say, what you don't want to say, they give you that platform to be like, I want to share this. It's your own initiative, sort of, like, you're not forced to be in that place.
You, I think, are doing a construction course at college, which would be very male-dominated, I imagine. I don't want to stereotype the construction.
It is sort of isolating.
So it must have been doubly tricky to sort of build connections and make friends. But you've made loads of friends at Chatterbox.
Yeah, and the thing is, it has provided sort of... Now I've met a few people, like Oliver, we go to the same college, but I did know that. So, like, we meet up in college sometimes, and it feels like it sort of provides... It brings the comfort from boxing to college and makes things so much easier, because I know, like, I've seen Oliver at boxing. He knows me. on a much deeper level than how I would find him on college.
Mm.
So we just meet up and it's like that day does go by much easier than it was when, like, in a more male-dominated kind of course.
And without Chatterbox, you'd both just still be sort of satellites floating around.
Yeah, we'd be in the same college, but we wouldn't know each other all.
What do you like most about Chatterbox, Oliver? You'd nodded off then, hadn't you?
No, I didn't expect you to ask me. Repeat the question.
What do you like most about it? If trying to persuade people listening to this program to make a donation to support the charity, what would you?
Speaking to new people, for me, it's not even the boxing part. I mean, the boxing's fun and everything, but I feel like speaking to new people, making new friends, feeling less like lonely.
And safe. They provide an environment in which you can do all of these things. Does anyone ever progress onto contact boxing, Jamie?
The option's there. There is a pathway for them to do that.
Be careful. Promise me you both be careful. Yeah. All right?
Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what we're trying to do, James, in that we kind of bring people together. We've got lots of support within the room from the coaches and staff, our psychotherapists. But actually, it's about those social connections that they can then take forward into the community. It's not just about the 2 hours they're with us, it's about the connections they make with each other that then can support each other going forward for the week, the months going forward in their lives.
I'm a huge fan of therapy in all its forms and all shapes, but I mean, you know, some people are quite cynical or skeptical about it, or they think it's a load of old bunkum. I've seen the effects it can have. Talking about your feelings can be hard until you actually start doing it, and then and then actually it's one of the healthiest things in the world. The group therapy session is very good, Melissa.
But the thing is, it's led by Steph, so it's more of a relaxed sort of environment where we do have sort of like an unwritten agreement that what I say to you, you have your opinions about it, but it's more of a discussion. But what I have told you, I know is safe in that environment. You're not going to go around telling people what I've told you, and it's sort of that trust that we're building on, and it's further strengthens the connections we've made.
I love it. And you've been obviously dealing with bereavement and grief, Oliver, lots of really tricky things. The group therapy must help you feel a little bit more seen, a little bit more heard.
Yeah, I feel like it's good because everybody's speaking about their own problems. It makes me feel like I'm not, like, oh, how do I put it? I'm not the only one going through stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's nice, like, caring for others and stuff like that. It makes me feel better.
I love that. Who's the better boxer? I'm not going to push you first. Sometimes I have politicians sitting in these chairs.
I am going to be confident. I want to say it's me.
Say it's me.
There's only one way to find out.
We do spy each other, so I think like we better ourselves.
I love it. That's fantastic. I let's see how much money we can help raise for Global's Make Some Noise, which is, of course, supporting Chatterbox this year. And we can't help people like Jamie, help people like Melissa and Oliver, who then help each other and help others and go back out into the community to help everybody, without you helping us in the first place. And it's really, really easy to do today. To donate £40, £30, £20 or £10, just text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10, no spaces, to 70766. It all goes to LBC's Make Some Noise, 100% of your donation. 16 and over only. Please seek your bill payer's permission. Standard network charges may apply, and the terms and conditions are all at makesomenoise.com. So just do it now. Text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 without a space to 70766, because even a small donation can make a big difference to people living through really tough circumstances. Jamie, Oliver, Melissa, thank you so much for coming along.
Thank you.
It's been a real privilege to meet you all. And the time now is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The IDF is retreating to agreed lines in Gaza. Gazans themselves begin the painful process of trying to return home. Hostage families wait.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging.
or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webyanycar.com.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Bird offers end Sunday in the Furniture Village sale with huge savings on many sofas, dining, beds and bedroom furniture. And that's on top of sale prices. Early Bird offers end this Sunday in the Furniture Village sale. And remember to order in time for Christmas.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:48 is the time. Amazing. I love it. I told you, you could tell from my voice, I think. You could always tell if I was ever going through the motions, but that is precisely the sort of charity. Oh, I must tell you, don't use WhatsApp. The text number that you need is 70766. It won't work if you use WhatsApp or if you text the usual LBC studio number. So you have to text LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10 to 70766. Okay, so that is it. Text to 70766. I'm just noticing quite a few things coming into the studio that suggests you've been trying to either text it to the usual text number or using WhatsApp to send it. So it only works if you text LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10 to 70766. Staying on the make some noise tip, as it were, I can tell you that we are recording a special live episode of my chart-topping podcast, Full Disclosure. I'll be joined by a very special guest, which says here to be revealed soon, but I think I've already told you who it is. We'll soon find out. If I've accidentally told you who it is, then you're about to text me their name, and anyway, don't do that. It's very unprofessional. I'll be joined by a very special... A very special guest to be revealed soon at the Royal Geographic Society in London on Thursday, the 19th of February. All proceeds will go to LBC's official charity, Make Some Noise. So there'll be unfiltered, honest conversation with a dedicated Q&A for you afterwards to put your questions to my guest, and even if you must, to me. If you want to buy tickets or find out more about the event, just head over to lbc.co.uk or keep an eye on the LBC app. I think there's a handy link on the LBC app that lets you donate to Make Some Noise without going through the process that I have just described. 10 to 1 is the time. A little bit more on the difference that books make, how they come into your life if you're not lucky enough to have had them in your life as a youngster. They come into your life later and the difference that they make. Sam's in Brighton. Sam, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello, Sam.
First time I've spoken to you.
Welcome.
I listen to you every day.
Thank you.
Just to say.
That's lovely.
So I'm 57 now. I left school with no qualifications at all. My parents are both working class,
yes.
But my dad went to sea. So they had basically they sent me to state school. I couldn't get on at all, so they sent me to private school.
Right.
I couldn't get on at all. They sent me back to state school. Couldn't get on at all.
Okay.
Left school with nothing. Went to art college briefly, but I just couldn't do the GCSEs that I needed to stay there.
Crikey.
When I was 19, someone gave me a book called The Passion by Jeanette Winterson.
Oh, yes.
And for some reason, I read it. it was historical fiction, and I was just totally gripped by that. And it just inspired me to want to create and write. I've always been quite good at art and stuff,
yeah.
And that kind of led. I was doing night classes in painting and illustration and stuff like that, and I eventually, without any qualifications but some work experience and a half decent interview, I got in when I was 28 to go to university to do performing arts and visual practice. And so I managed to get my degree. I got a 2.1.
So you knew that you wanted to learn, and you knew that you were bright,
yes.
I think, but something hadn't
yes.
quite clicked until you picked up that book.
It really hadn't, and I think I'm probably dyslexic. I've never been
sure.
diagnosed, and I've managed to, I have to say, I mean, this it was that book that triggered all that kind of stuff, and I read now much more than most of my very academic friends who don't seem to have so much interest in that. But I would say that definitely when computers came in and they, you know, automatically amended spelling and what have you. But I then went on to do a postgrad in dramatic writing and a master's in writing and personal development, and I ran writing for recovery groups for mental health service users.
You're like the perfect caller today. You're knitting together some of the work that Make Some Noise does with the conversation we were having about books. And like Danny in Grimsby, it just sort of ignited some creative spark in you that was there all along but may never have been ignited. And that's why I find these topics, these stories so powerful and so important, because it's the life not lived, isn't it? It's what would have happened if that had never been brought into your life. And you're lucky that it was. You're luckier than me because you nearly missed it. It's like a bus that I'm already on. And then you just get that little opportunity when it pulls up briefly outside or at the side of the road where you are, and you can hop on. And that's why it's class-based. That's why the relevance of the background of the boys who aren't reading is important, because you are less likely ever to be waiting at this particular bus stop if you are white working class, if you are a white working class boy, or if you're working class in general. The numbers are stark. So 25% of white working class boys had not read a book. 13% of all the other pupils. So that's pretty much double. And you just wonder about the missed opportunity, the missed resources, you know, the contributions that could have been made, like the ones that Sam described. I hope we've got time for another caller, but I want to play you a little clip of Jack Thorne, who you may not know the name, but you may. He's a bit like James Graham, and they're quite... basically, if there's something brilliant on the telly or the stage at the moment, and it's bang up modern, like really, really recent, chances are one of them wrote it. But he did Adolescence most recently. He's got a new version of Lord of the Flies dropping imminently, any minute now. He wrote Enola Holmes as well, the sort of Sherlock Holmes update. He's just a fascinating bloke, and he's my guest on Full Disclosure this week. We talk a bit about Adolescence, we talk about his background. He actually benefited from precisely the kind of charity that Makes Some Noise supports when he found himself unexpectedly and seriously ill.
If people get prickly heat on their holiday,
yeah.
I basically got a chronic version of prickly heat. So if I was in sunlight, if I was near a radiator, or if I was moving, I would have prickles. And if I did any of those things too much, I would be overcome with prickles. and eventually my whole body would be red and swollen and in pain. So it's just like basically a nettle rash that takes over your whole body. That's what chronic urticaria is. And at its worst, it was incredibly painful. And at its worst, I was unable to do anything.
You're literally lying flat on your back.
Literally lying flat on my back.
So you have to drop out of university.
Yes.
Postpone your studies, move back home, and, yes. and lie on your back in the middle of December with the windows wide open because you were effectively, you've described it as being allergic to moving.
Yes, I was allergic to movement.
How frightened were you?
Very, and I went to see a doctor, and the doctor said, I think this might be forever. And when you hear that, and you're like, oh, okay. So everything that I've been trying to do is now gone. Everything that I want to be is no longer possible, and I've got to work out how to live this life. At the same time, my mum was making me a cake a week, and I was eating a lot, because that was the only happiness. So I went from 12 to 18 stone in the space of about 5 months, because I wasn't moving.
You weren't just not physically moving. You'd lost that sense that was obviously very important to you of moving towards something in life as well.
Yes.
Whatever it may be, some unspecified but fully satisfying situation.
Yes, I wanted to write. By that point, I thought, oh, maybe I'll write something really brilliant in this sort of, you know, maybe I'll do what Chekhov did when, you know, Chekhov was exiled. Exactly. But everything I wrote was awful.
And you also, I think, alienated the friends that you'd made at Cambridge by sending them endless letters.
So
it was a really horrible moment. This.
Yeah, what would happen was they'd send a nice email to me. Yeah. I'd send a longer email back. They'd reply very nicely with a longer email. And then I'd almost immediately send another long email back. And they'd get exhausted
by it.
You
can't keep up,
yeah,
can you?
Yeah.
And that's it. That's your life. You're living in that room in your
head. Exactly.
And they're back at Cambridge doing all the other things you
do. And they don't want to deal with me.
And it was a theatre group for disabled people that got him back on his feet, actually, and kind of on the path that has led to the West End and even Emmys. He was still glowing, actually, because we recorded it a couple of weeks ago. He just got back from the Emmys with Stephen Graham. And when they talk about it, when he talked about it, it was a privilege to actually witness. That cast must be so tight. Stephen Graham has a habit of doing that, doesn't he? But because he co-wrote Adolescence with the man whose voice you just heard, Jack Thorne. And you can hear a lot more of his voice on Full Disclosure this week. You can also, of course, hear my interview, the sort of special episode of Full Disclosure with an incredible woman who, as you heard earlier, was lying in a hospital bed not realising, or not the doctors nearby not knowing that she could overhear them when they very coolly started discussing the imminent amputation of all four of her limbs, potentially. And she's gone on to turn that into a huge positive core, or Corinne Hutton, setting up the charity Finding Your Feet. So before I go, one last reminder of how you can donate to Make Some Noise this year. 40, 30, 20 or £10. Just text LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10. No spaces to 70766. 100% goes to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only. Please seek the bill payer's permission. Standard network charges may apply. Terms and conditions are at makesomenoise.com. That's LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20 or LBC 10. No spaces to 70766. If you missed any of today's show, listen on Global Player or the LBC app. Not just the radio shows, but also, of course, the podcasts, including Full Disclosure and James O'Brien Daily. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4. Sheila Fogarty is with you now.
Thanks very much indeed, James. And throughout the programme, we'll be hearing more about the charities that you help with your very kind donations on Make Some Noise Day. So look forward to that. At 3 today, Prince William was moved to tears in a conversation with a mother whose husband took his own life after their one-year-old died. It's a desperately sad story. She told the prince that she wishes her husband had just come to her and spoken. At that point, he breaks down himself. Let's talk more about how people can do just that and reach out when they're feeling suicidal. At 2, we're going to talk about ID cards for 13-year-olds, something Yvette Cooper couldn't rule out earlier on today. But we'll begin in Gaza and Israel. The wait goes on and the suffering goes on.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Israeli military says a ceasefire in Gaza has now come into effect as part of the US-backed peace plan. It says troops in Gaza have been redeploying to the agreed withdrawal line after the deal was approved last night. The next stage will see the release of all remaining hostages in exchange for hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. Alex Gardler is a spokesperson for Israel's embassy in the UK.
The good thing about it is that there are many, many partners that are part of this plan, both the Americans, also Qatar and Turkey. So we see this pressure that could build up on Hamas to leave Gaza as promised.
Donald Trump has missed out on the Nobel Peace Prize. The US president had hoped to win it for his work in the Middle East. It's gone to Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado. Nobel chair Jorgen Wotner-Friedness said she'd unified the country against far-left leader Nicolas Maduro.
When authoritarians seize power, it is crucial to recognize courageous defenders of freedom who rise and resist. Democracy depends on people who refuse to stay silent.
Ukraine is reporting Russia has launched almost 500 drones and missiles in an overnight attack on its energy sector. 8 people have been taken to hospital in Ukraine. It's Global's Make Some Noise Day. All our stations, including Classic FM, Heart and Radio X, are coming together to raise money for people across the UK facing life's toughest challenges. People like 9-year-old Max, whose mum was diagnosed with cancer. He got the chance to spend time with other children in a similar situation through a group called WOLO, funded by Global's Make Some Noise.
I felt really sad. WOLO helped me. Got to spend time with loads of people who've been through the same thing.
And so far, you have helped us raise £2,725,341, so thank you. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 2 points at 95.11. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. The LBC weather, cloudy with some spots of rain in central and northwestern parts of the UK, some sunny spells developing later, and a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search "Don't Get Caught Out."
LBC's Make Some Noise Day.
Right now, across the country, there are so many people going through unimaginably difficult times. Our official charity, Make Some Noise, is here to support those people facing life's toughest challenges. One of the people who've already benefited from your donations is Ben, a 25-year-old who has autism and has spent much of his life in the foster care and social care system, who's then gone on to experience mental health struggles and periods of homelessness.
I grew up in a horrible home, but then from the age of 4, I've been living in the foster care system. Over the past few years, I developed anxiety and depression during college. There was one time where I tried to take my own life just because my family was abusive, so I eventually moved to the charity. It took a while to open up because it's not an easy subject to mention. They just constantly helped and just been there for me all the time, and it's just been really nice to know that other people care and actually want to support.
Well, Make Some Noise helps people like Ben by funding guidance and housing to provide vital ongoing support for young care leavers. They wouldn't get that help if it wasn't for your generosity. £25 could provide essential counselling and emotional support sessions for another young care leaver like Ben, giving them the help and confidence they need to make it alone. To donate £40, £30, £20 or £10, text LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10, no spaces and capital letters LBC, LBC40, LBC30, LBC20 or LBC10 to the number 70766. 100% of your donation will go to LBC's Make Some Noise. 16 and over only, please, and seek the bill payer's permission. Standard network charges may apply. Terms and conditions are at makesomenoise.com. So a reminder, you can text LBC 40, LBC 30, LBC 20, or LBC 10 without a space to 70766.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
And we'll be reminding you of all of that information throughout the afternoon as well. Our mission is to raise as much money as we can together. So we'll do that together over the next 3 hours. I want to start this hour, though, by talking again about the situation in Gaza and Israel. But a focus on Paris, actually, to start with, which is where our own foreign secretary, newly appointed foreign secretary Yvette Cooper, has been with other foreign ministers looking at this issue and how the European Union and Britain can be involved. In the meantime, Palestinians are continuing to attempt to return home to Gaza's north, many of them. As the Israeli military says, a ceasefire is now in effect. Forces have pulled back to the lines agreed under Donald Trump's plan, according to the IDF, but will continue to, in their words, remove any immediate threat. Now, Donald Trump clearly is at the heart of this agreement. He's not the only man, and he said it himself. He couldn't have achieved it without those Arab nations that have been supportive of it as well. Qatar, Egypt, Turkey, just to name three of them. The Reform UK leader, Nigel Farage, said that Donald Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. They were announced today, and he wasn't on the list, but that was because nominations were way earlier. But he believes that Donald Trump deserves recognition for his diplomacy on Gaza.
Let's face it, whether you like Donald Trump, whether you dislike Donald Trump, he's the only person, he's the only leader that could have pulled this deal off. But, to be fair, you know, Marco Rubio, done a very, very good job. Steve Witkoff, his friend, another real estate developer, good job. And the sort of quiet little hero behind the scenes, who you don't see much in the press, but it was in many ways the architect of the Abraham Accords that we saw a few years ago, and has done such a big job to get all those Arab nations on board, is Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. That's the team that has pulled this off, but it's done it with Donald at the head of it, and it's a fantastic achievement, and we should all be cheering it. I did actually sign a petition in the European Parliament 8 years ago for him to get the Nobel Peace Prize, and isn't it nice to have an American president, unlike so many that went before in the last few years, that seeks peace and not endless war?
Well, Aggie Shonbury joins me, LBC's political correspondent, who's in Paris for that meeting of foreign ministers. Just before we get on to that topic, I mean, Nigel Farage, I think he means what he says when he says that. Aggie, I don't know what you think, but I think he's also seeing an opportunity to very much stay on side with the Trump administration.
I think, Sheila, you're right. Both things can be true. But I'm sure he really believes it. And there are lots of people, even actually critics of Donald Trump, who actually are saying, you know, fair play to him. Maybe he does deserve the Nobel Peace Prize that we know he is so desperate for. Of course, not happening this year because nominations closed in January. But lots of people, not just Nigel Farage, suggesting that maybe next year, Sheila, is going to be his year.
And this meeting that you're at, Aggie, in Paris, it's been prompted by the ceasefire deal. Is that right?
So this deal was actually organized.